Joe Rogan Podcast. Check it out.
The Joe Rogan Experience.
Train by day, Joe Rogan Podcast by night, all day.
George, congratulations.
Thank you.
What does it feel like?
Yeah, look, it's been pretty crazy. You know, obviously on top of the world right now. But yeah.
Does it feel like you're living in a fog, like a dream?
A little bit, but I've had that vision, you know, for so long. You know, I've manifested for so long. And, you know, before this fight, even as a young amateur, I knew I'd be world champion. I knew one day my time would come, and, you know, it finally did.
Well, I was told about you a couple of years ago by my friend Vinny Shorman, who's big in the Muay Thai world, and Liam Harrison is Muay Thai world champion. They were telling me how awesome you were years ago. But until Saturday night of last week, the world, you know, they didn't know. They had to see it.
Yeah, look, both great guys. And I think it was 2018. I was in Wildcard Gym sparring, and I'm in the ring, and I see these two guys, and they're watching. So I thought, you know, I'll put on a show for these guys, and let's see. They might be someone that can take me to the next level. They might be promoters. Who knows? So I always want to put on a show. And they couldn't believe it. And then I knew that they'll come in on your show when I started speaking to them. And when they dropped my name on you, I was like, wow, this is amazing. Now I'm here with you.
Well, your performance against Teofimo was spectacular. It was amazing. And, I mean, it was a fight where – how much of an underdog were you coming into that fight?
I was a huge underdog, you know, 7-1 underdog.
Wow.
You know, betonline.ag had me 7-1. So, you know, that just shows the adversity that you have to come through. You can be the massive underdog, but no matter what, you know, you get through it and you can win whatever you choose to do.
Well, you were undefeated coming into that fight, but you just hadn't faced the same level of opposition that he had. And it didn't mean that you weren't capable of it. It just, you just hadn't had the opportunity before. So it wasn't a 7-1 like they didn't think you had the skills. It was 7-1 that you just hadn't had that moment in the sun before.
I think because, that's right, I haven't had my moment yet leading into that fight. But, you know, he was coming off the big Lomachenko fight, the big win there. What he'd done in that fight, so impressive. He knocked out Richard Comey as well. So the hype, the noise that he was making, this was just going to be a normal mandatory fight, you know, that took so long to make. And he was supposed to just do the business and move on to something bigger. But, you know, that hunger that I had, you know, that tunnel vision to show who I am, to show how great I am. And I had to go through it all in that fight, you know, from the cuts to being put down in round 10. But I knew that this is my greatness now, how good I can be and show the world and shock the world.
It is, you definitely did shock the world. It is a reoccurring theme in boxing and in all combat sports when someone takes an opponent lightly and they go in thinking they're just going to steamroll this guy and then they get met with reality. I mean, it's happened so many times in fighters' careers. And then there's also the other reoccurring theme, a guy like yourself who has his eyes on the prize, who's completely focused, and people are counting them out, and then they rise to the occasion and become a superstar. And that's what happened to you.
You see it many times. And I feel that he didn't take me lightly because he was in great shape. He was in unbelievable condition. I felt as we led into the fight and we had that first press conference where we looked into each other's eyes, and I saw a guy who, it came too fast, and you needed to be matched with someone that was not going to take a step backwards. And the whole thing was this whole preparation. I was never going to take one step backwards. I never gave him that inch. And even in the fight, I never gave him that inch. I was always there to be dominant. And I felt like he was a bully kind of character, you know, where he bullied Lomachenko, he bullied Comey.
Yeah.
He bullied all his past opponents. But, you know, I've come from bullying. I was an overweight kid at a young age. I've been bullied all my life.
You were overweight?
I was overweight. I used to be 135 pounds at like 10 years of age until I fell into boxing. So, you know, I knew it straight away. I go, okay, I know how to stand up to this guy. I know what I got to do in this fight. And he saw how serious I was. So, you know, we stayed focused. We kept the tunnel vision. And we done the business.
Well, you did a beautiful job of boxing him as well. I mean, you stayed in the pocket and cut angles. You landed beautiful combinations. That one right hand in the first round, though, really set the tone for that fight. When you sat him down at the end of the first and dropped him, And it was just, and it was a hard right hand. I mean, it was a beautiful right hand. And when you see his eyes roll back and he drops and he gets up and he's like, what the fuck just happened? That was a giant wake-up call, and it really set the tone for the rest of the fight.
Yeah, it did. I went into that first round. I knew he'd be very emotional. I knew he took it so personal. And leading up to the whole fight week, when I kept getting asked, is this personal for you? Because I knew it was so personal for him. So, no, this is business for me. You know, this is another fight. This is what I love to do. Doesn't matter who's in that side of the ring fighting against me. And I knew I had to get his respect straight away. He would come out crazy. I stayed composed. I landed some really good short shots on the inside in that first round. And like the great Customato said to Muhammad Ali when he fought George Foreman, he goes, how am I going to beat this guy? How can I beat this puncher? And Cus goes, hit him with the right hand. In the first round, hit him with your best right hand and show him that, hey, I can punch as well. And I had that in my head. You know, I have the great book by Customato, and I have it highlighted. And before I went to the arena, I went over it, showed it to just have it in my head.
What an amazing mind he had. Customato's mind for boxing and for the psychology of boxing was just so incredible. You know, and the fact that Mike Tyson found that man when he was 13 years old, it's almost like destiny, you know?
And you know what? I believe that everything in life is destiny. You know, I look at my road to get to the championship. It just falls into place. But with destiny, you need to work hard. You need to, you know, take it in your own hands as well. But everything's meant to be, and that right hand was meant to be. And I said it to my team. I go, you watch in the first round. I'm going to catch him early. I'm going to hurt him with something because I knew I was looking for that right hand. And when he came out crazy and he was heavy on the front foot, he tried to fake the jab, and I saw that front foot right there. I knew his head wouldn't move. I go, okay, here it is. Here's that shot I've been dreaming about my whole life. Bang. I let it go like a lightning strike.
Let's take a look at it. Jimmy, show me that punch because that was just so beautiful. I screamed when I was at home and I watched it.
Yeah.
I yelled out. I was by myself. I was sitting in the living room. Oh!
The whole world just jumped up. Yeah. Like, okay. Now we got a fight because I don't think many expected me to even stand a chance in the first round. You know, they were so vocal about one round, especially his dad.
Well, but his dad made a huge bet. Didn't he bet $100,000 that he was going to knock you out within two rounds?
Yeah, well, I want to find out the person he bet against because...
Here it is. Take a look at this and take it in.
See that
nice,
short left
beautiful
hook there,
left hook. Well, you were in front of him, but you weren't there. Yeah. That was what was beautiful about it. Like your head movement, like right there, that angle. God, it's just gorgeous box. Here it is. Right here, baby. Boy. Bink! Oh, my goodness.
And I saw it in his eyes as soon as I landed that shot and he got up. He thought, what the fuck was that?
Yeah, you can see it right there. He's like, whoa.
Yeah, now we're in a fight.
And then the fake smile.
And this shot I landed here, bang.
Yeah.
I was a little bit off balance. But that shot there was probably more devastating than the original shot. And then I'm just going off. I had to say it. I said, you know, now I'm here. One round.
Is that what you said to him?
That's what I said. One round. Okay.
Oh, my God.
Now we're in a fight.
It was an amazing performance. Why was it emotional for him? What was about that?
He had this this theory in his head, and the people around him, you know, someone told him that when he tested positive for COVID and we were in Miami, you know, I was very upset, very disappointed. You know, I trained for four months in preparation.
Wasn't this fight was rescheduled like five times?
Yeah, well, June 19th was the original date, and 4 days out, he tested positive for COVID. So on the day that I found out, obviously I've been away from my kids, my family. I flew my pregnant wife, you know, out to be with me, you know, for that fight week. She took a lot of sacrifice as well because the doctors were telling her not to go with the way the world is at the moment. But, you know, that's a sacrifice we make. And, you know, when I found out, I was devastated. Literally wanted to cry because this is how much it meant to me. And then I was obviously angry and upset. So that night when we were going back to our room, we had a dinner and we went to the room. On the way to the room, there was the bar, and his team were having a good time and enjoying themselves. Obviously, Lopez was not there. And I found it strange. I go, why are they enjoying themselves? You know, their son just, you know, ruined the fight. But one of his team members tried to be a smartass and come up and try to take a photo and try to be, you know, try to aggravate me. And I got my wife, they got my father with me, I got my team. I said, look, just stay away. It's not the time. You know, I don't know, you guys might have COVID. You know, you're with Lopez all the time. And they got a little bit more aggressive and tried to push the matter. And I said, look, just get the fuck out of here. I don't want to deal with it right now. And that's all it was. And all of a sudden, someone's gone and told him that I've had a go at his mother, which I never even saw his mother. I don't even know what she looks like. And that just played. I think they're trying to motivate him. I think they're just trying to push him a little bit extra, make it more personal. But it's the worst thing. You don't want to take this, any combat sport, personal. Because as soon as you do, everything is slow. You lose your reactions. You're going there headhunting, and you can see it. He was headhunting, and, you know, perfect. It felt perfect for me that what I was coming to do.
Well, you maintained that composure through the entire 12-round fight, too, which was incredible. Like, your precision, your movement, you never got lazy. You never just stood in front of him. You know, and even when you got caught in the 10th, you still bounced back beautifully in the 11th. I mean, you didn't change anything. You know, you didn't like become hesitant.
Yep. And that's a testament to my conditioning and how hard I train and how prepared I am for every single fight. And that's been my whole career. You know, from my pro debut to winning the Undisputed Championship, I've prepared for every opponent, given them respect and prepared as a world championship fight. So when I got put down in round 10, I was actually smiling. I was enjoying the whole adversity, because this is what makes fights like this great. And yeah, okay, now you're going to show how great you are. You're going to rise. And that was a minute 45 in that round. I think Lopez finishes any other lightweight in the world at that stage, but not this lightweight. And you know, I had that inside me. And, you know, it's crazy.
How bad were you hurt by that right hand?
I wasn't badly hurt. It was more like a flash knockdown, you know, kind of back of the ear, cup the ear. Mm-hmm. The equilibrium was a little bit out. But it's going to take a lot more than that shot to put me away. I come back to the corner, and the coaches were like, you're right, you're okay? I go, yeah, I'm good. And I started smiling. They go, you sure? What are you smiling for? I said, because I made the mistake there. Now watch what I'm going to do. Watch how great I'm going to be. I think round 11 was the best round of the fight. I literally busted him up, and then round 12 closed the show.
That cut that he had over his left eye was brutal.
It was. It was from a punch, a beautiful shot, split him open. My one was from a head clash. So, you know, they thought I couldn't punch. They thought I didn't have the power.
Why do you think they thought that? Is that just wishful thinking? Did they just get overconfident?
I think because my last two fights, when I fought Mickey Bay and Lee Selby, both former world champions, you know, I didn't knock them out. But these guys are veterans of the sport, guys that have been there before. So they know how to move around the ring. Much more experience than what I was at that stage, and more experience than what Lopez has. I just had to box nice with them guys, you know, learn the tricks from the veterans. But they felt the power as well. So I knew what I possessed. I knew what I had in the tank and in the bank. And that's it. Done my business against Lopez.
Having trained with Manny Pacquiao had to be a huge asset for you, because even though Bay was probably your biggest name opponent up until then, you know, you'd been, how many rounds had you done with Manny?
250 rounds over three world title campaigns. So
it started with the Jeff Horn fight?
It did, yeah. When Jeff got obviously the fight with Manny Pacquiao, I was in Los Angeles. And I was sparring his ex-sparring partners, Jose Ramirez and Ray Beltran. I was doing 5 and 5, and these guys are good fighters, former world champions. And Freddie come over and goes, you know, Manny's got the Jeff Horn fight. So, yeah, I'm hearing about it. He goes, well, you're sparring his sparring partners. How would you like to go against your countrymen and help Manny prepare? I said, Freddie, I'm all in. You know, I know he's my countryman, but it's an opportunity of a lifetime. Yeah, Manny's my idol.
You can't pass that up.
So I had a fight a couple of weeks after the sparring sessions that I impressed and got the opportunity. So I still had to win that fight against Kamil Bala in New Zealand. And in between that fight, I got a really bad cut on my eye. And the first thing that went to my head was, I got to sparring with Manny Pacquiao in a week and a half. I go, now this cut might stop it. So I wasn't even thinking about the opponent or thinking about the fight. I knew I was going to win this fight by any means, but I was thinking about my opportunity against Manny Pacquiao. But, you know, we got there.
Did you super glue it?
We got the stitches.
Yeah.
A week after the stitches came out, I was putting so much vitamin E cream and every bit of, you know, theory that I could find on the internet to make sure it closed up good and wasn't going to give me an issue. And I went into that first sparring session with Manny, and it was okay with a cut.
Did you know Jeff Horn?
I did know Jeff, yeah. We were in the amateurs together.
How did he feel about you training with Manny?
Yeah, he wasn't happy at that stage, you know, but Yeah, he's a good guy. He's actually a good guy of the sport. And at that stage, he had come out and said, you know, why is he going against me? He's countryman. Why couldn't he give me a phone call? And me being me, you know, I turned around, him being a school teacher, and said, I've never asked for permission, you know, and, from a school teacher ever. So I'm gonna go do my thing with Pacquiao no matter what.
I think he's got to understand that you had to.
I think he does. I think he does now.
Yeah, but he had to. And to be able to have an opportunity like that to spar 250 rounds with one of the greatest of all time, I mean, what he won world titles in, what, eight divisions?
Eight divisions, 13 crazy. Or 14 world titles.
Crazy.
It will never be done again.
Crazy.
And as much as you want to see records broken and, you know, I want to break records, that man is a one of one.
He's a one of one. Yeah. I mean, when he knocked down Thurman in that fight, I was like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
This guy's 40 years old and still can crack and still as fast as lightning.
Yeah, look. The power that he possesses, but it's not a thumping power. It's that explosive speed, that explosive power, the footwork. He gets in position, and all of a sudden he's landed 3, 4, 5 shots, and then he's angled off. A lot like I did in my fight against Lopez. You know, a lot of that, you know, sparring paid off, and it did shape me. And I know he did put out a tweet as well, saying that I hope the sparring we did, you know, helped you in this fight, and straight away.
That's amazing.
And I was also excited. Yeah, he's a legend of the sport.
He is a legend, and he's such an unusual guy. You know what's crazy about him is his calves.
Yeah.
When you look
massive.
At that, they're giant. Yeah. They're like a thigh.
And I know the reason why, because in General Santos, the mountains that he runs and that steep hill, that's why they're so big, because he's always constantly running the mountains. And I was doing the mountain runs with him.
Yeah.
My calves started getting bigger and bigger. But I understand, yeah, why his calves are huge. But he's always bouncing. He's always moving around.
Yes.
Like, he'll bounce for like 20-something rounds. You know, he'll do his pads and he's jumping up and down. And, you know, he really is an unbelievable person, unbelievable athlete, and you know, legend of the sport. I think as time progresses, people are really going to, you know, appreciate his greatness.
Yeah, and coming back from defeats too. I mean, he's a guy that's had his downs. Yeah. He's had his ups and his downs, and you know, he's always smiling and always friendly to people. It's like he's so admirable just as a human being.
And it shows too that defeats, you know, I love how the UFC is, you know, losses are losses.
Yeah.
You know, boxing has this stereotype where the zero is so everything. Important. I'm undefeated, yeah. But would you rather see the best fight in the best? You know,
right.
You're going to get competitive fights and great fights. But unfortunately, in boxing, it's not like that.
Well, the biggest draw in the sport is Canelo, and Canelo is not undefeated.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's one way of looking at it. You know, he lost to Floyd.
Yeah.
When you know, Manny is also like a world-class pool player.
Well, he's got the pool tables.
Yeah.
At his mansion in his
house.
He's
really
good. So he's, nonstop.
Like, he plays like a professional.
And he loves his basketball.
Yeah,
you should see
this guy great at basketball
shooting
too.
Threes. It's unbelievable.
Wow, he's a serious athlete.
Yeah.
Did training with him, did you make any changes to the way you approach fights or the way you prepare for fights after training with him?
I did. I learned the one percenters, the extra bit to do the extra rounds. You know, usually before the sparring with Manny Pacquiao, you know, you do your 8 rounds or your 10 rounds of pads and you're sparring, but that's it. You do your ab work and you finish. With him, he does his pad work. He does his sparring, but then he's on the bag. He's on the shadow boxing. He's there doing the pad work. So the extra rounds just builds that conditioning and that stamina. And that's what I just found, that push more rounds. You know, if the body can keep going, push more and more. That's what I learned from him.
Is it a thing where you have to figure out what your body can do? Because obviously overtraining is an issue with fighters too. Have you ever had a fight where you felt like you overtrained for it?
Not as a professional. In the amateurs, yes, as a young amateur coming up, I did feel certain times where I overtrained. But I think the reason is, as an amateur, you're fighting so constant.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you might have 3 fights in 1 week and then you got 2 fights the week after. But in the professional ranks, I've always been very smart, got a good team around me, and I made sure that every preparation is pinpoint. And a lot of people were thinking I was going to burn out for this fight and overtrain because of such a long, you know, preparation, nearly 10 months.
Yeah.
But I said, look, I got a good team. I know what I'm doing. I know how my body feels. If I started to feel a little bit run down and burning out, I'd pull back. But you're fighting for the biggest prize in boxing. How can you put your foot off the pedal? This is everything. This is going to change my life.
Well, you did it perfectly. And as far as your preparation, because you were in tip-top shape in the 12th round. You know, you never lost any steam. You never lost any endurance. And the way you bounced back from that knockdown in the 10th really showed what kind of conditioning you had.
And I think that the conditioning there, especially to bounce back after being put down, is it shows. Because if I wasn't conditioned, I wouldn't be able to survive that round.
Yeah. When you think of like preparation for fights, you know, and you see guys like Manny Pacquiao, you see guys like Floyd Mayweather, you see guys that are just always in peak condition, that extra edge that they have that seems to be, I mean, that is, there's not one elite world-class fighter that you can say doesn't have that same kind of endurance and that same kind of discipline.
100%. I think that elite level guys, you know, you need to have it. If you don't have that conditioning, I don't think you even get to that elite. I think you need to have that from a young age, from early in your professional career, to be able to have that work ethic, that relentless drive, you know, to have that conditioning.
The only guy I can think that wasn't like that is James Toney.
Yeah, but his defense too was unbelievable.
Amazing.
As well.
Like amazing.
Defensively,
yeah.
You know, you watch these guys and you think, wow, unbelievable. But the conditioning here was a problem for him.
Yeah.
You look at the guys like Floyd Mayweather, Manny Pacquiao, you know, all the greats that have that conditioning. Muhammad Ali to do 15 round fights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was even telling the commission, can we move it to 15 rounds? That's how, you know, conditioned I was for the fight.
Yeah. Well, back then, you know, the 15 round fights, they weren't just 15 round fights. They also weighed in the day of the fight, which is crazy.
And they would have probably fought 3 weeks before that as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's real fighters. That's real warriors.
Right. You go back to the Sugar Ray Robinson days and you've seen that 100.
Yeah.
How many different fights did he have? I think, what was Robinson's record when he retired? I think it was close to 200 fights.
200 fights. Yeah, it's unbelievable. I've only had 20, and to think how the preparations are. And what you put your body through and how sore you are after a fight, especially a 12-round fight. To think these guys would fight and then a week or a week and a half later, they're fighting again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's real warriors. That's gladiatorial stuff.
It really is crazy, and that's one of the things that the old-timers always point to. When you try to make a judgment call of like who's the greatest of all time, they always point to Robinson. They're like, just the sheer amount. I think he was something crazy like 90-0 before he lost his first fight. 201. He lost to Joey Archer in 65. That was his 201st fight. That is crazy, man.
It's 3 fights in 3 weeks, 4 weeks.
And he was 44. Crazy. Yeah,
that there, just saying that is
unbelievable. I mean, just unbelievable. If you go way back, Jamie, I think it was like close to his 100th fight before he had his first loss.
Yeah.
I think he lost to LaMotta. Okay, what year? What number was that? So I guarantee these are all wins. So the draw was, 41. Okay, so it's 41 fights. So that was LaMotta. He lost to LaMotta. And then came back and beat him. But just what a record that guy had.
Absolutely incredible to think that, you know, this great had over 200 fights and would fight, you know, every couple of weeks.
Yeah.
You know, 15 round fights. You know, it's incredible.
But
that's real fighters back then. I love that. I love the history of our sport.
Yeah, they certainly were real fighters, but it's also not the best way for your body. Yeah, and your brain.
Yeah.
Right?
Because, you know, like the punishment you take in a fight, you know, you need to be able to recover.
Yeah.
Now, you'd think that them fighting 201 fights, 202 fights that he had, and be fighting every couple of weeks.
Right.
You know, that body is taking a lot of punishment, that brain.
I know, it's crazy. Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy to think of, you know, and the end of his life wasn't the best.
Mm.
You know, when you see guys like that stay in too long, like Ali, like a lot of these guys, do you have it mapped out when you're going to exit the sport?
Yeah, look, I've seen it time and time again. You know, even the great Manny Pacquiao, my good friend, that last fight that he had, I wanted to cry watching it because I know how great he is. I know what he's done. To see that fight just the shots weren't coming off. The footwork wasn't there. The feet were slow.
But don't you think that fight was kind of, the whole thing was fucked because last-minute change of opponents?
It was a difficult preparation because he prepared for Spence and all of a sudden, Ugas.
Yeah.
You know, came in and...
Ugas is clever.
He's a very good fighter.
Very good fighter.
Cuban schooled, that style that he has. And he can brawl too. He can fight. So, he got him. Got him at a good time as well. Everything suited perfect for Ugas that night. But when you see these other legends, Roy Jones, Muhammad Ali.
Yeah.
They go that extra step. And it's hard for a fighter. As much as you want to get out, you think about, okay, when can I get out?
Right.
You know, get as much as you can from the sport and... win your championships and get out. But we're fighters. Like I said this weekend when I was at the Haney Diaz fight, I said, I feel good. I feel like I'm fighting this week. If someone pulls out, I'll fight. That's the kind of worry and that battle mentality I have.
That's so awesome.
I don't even want to imagine.
How much weight do you cut?
Not much, 10 pounds. Yeah.
How many days do you need to do that and feel good?
Naturally, my body weight, it comes right low. The day before the weigh-in, a pound and a half, 2 pounds, a hot bath, and I'm there.
Oh, nothing.
The weight is easy.
That's great.
But I feel good. I've been told that you should go to 130 before I won these championships. You could be champion at 130. I said, yeah, I can be champion at 130. I would be champion at 130, but what for? I go,
you're champion at 135.
I'm champion at 135, and I feel good at 135. I feel strong at 135. I've got that extra bounce, that energy. I can eat throughout the weight cut. So, sometimes fighters want to sacrifice that weight division and lose that extra bit, but they lose themselves in the actual battle and the fight.
Yeah.
The fight becomes the weight cut. We've seen it time and time again.
Well, in the UFC, it's a bigger problem because there's only 8 weight classes. Yep. It's the gaps between the weight classes are ridiculous.
Well, you look at, I was looking at some photos of Conor McGregor when he was fighting
45.
At 45.
Yeah.
And how skinny he was and
looked
brutal.
Like death.
Even Khabib as well. The brutal weight cuts. It's incredible.
It's not good. It's just Conor never lost never lost at 45, but also never missed weight. He made weight every time he tried at 45, but it was a rough one. When you would see him at the weigh-ins, he looked like a skeleton.
And that's when you see big issues in fights and problems start where, brain damage and fighters unfortunately pass away. And we've seen it in boxing because they lose all that weight. They're so dehydrated in the brain where they don't hydrate properly as well. And all of a sudden, you see it in the fights. They take brutal shots and unfortunately things happen in the fight. So, I'd rather be feeling great, be hydrated. I know that I'm going to this fight, that there's going to be no issues with that and, feel good.
No, I think that's the right approach to be healthy. And if you look at boxing, I think the vast majority of deaths occur when guys have caught weight. Yep. I don't think there's very many deaths at all in the heavyweight division. I think the heavyweight division is unusual in that. You get the biggest guys or the hardest punchers, and yet you have the least amount of deaths because they're not cutting any weight.
And it's scary, man. It is really scary. Like, I got 3 kids.
Yeah.
And I got a life away from boxing.
Yeah.
So when you think of that, when you go in there, your life is on the line, And all of a sudden, you're trying to make this weight. You want to dehydrate yourself and put yourself at more risk. I'd rather feel comfortable and feel good.
Well, it's that balancing act, right? You're trying to figure out what's the best approach to be bigger and have maybe a little bit more horsepower behind the punches, or to be healthy and then you have more gas tank. You can go longer. Yep. You can push a faster pace. You're lighter on your feet. It's like...
Well, it's a great example. My fight with Lopez.
Yes.
He was the bigger man.
How much do you think he cuts?
I think he cuts a fair bit. Yeah. I think probably 10 pounds, a couple of days out from the fight.
Yeah.
But I know that he puts on a lot of size too. He was way bigger than me in that fight.
Looked bigger.
Yeah. He would have put a lot more on. But again, it shows that, it's not about the size of a fighter.
Right.
And the way I've always had that approach is it's about the size of the heart, how much you want it, the willpower, what you're ready to go through. And that's the way I took into that fight.
Have you gone back and watched the fight?
No.
You
no, haven't? I have not watched the fight.
Interesting.
The reason being is when I get home, my friends and family, I want to sit down, have a watch party, and just relive the moment with them.
Mm.
That's why I don't want to watch it. I think that's what I'm trying to achieve.
Yeah.
And people have been asking me, why have you not watched the fight? I'm trying to achieve to sit back, take myself away from the fight and just watch it with everyone like it's live.
Yeah.
No, that's what I'm trying to achieve with that.
Well, you're going to enjoy it.
I know, yeah. Well,
spoiler alert, yeah. It turns out good for you.
I hope so.
It does. What's interesting about it, though, I wanted to talk to you about this, is the corner advice that he was getting.
Yeah.
Did you hear about any of that?
I have heard about that, but we knew that coming in. I knew that, you know, the corner that he has, you know, I don't want to put anyone on the spot, but his father, you know, is when you're getting information and you gotta have trust in your corner. You know, my corner is unbelievable from, you know, my coaches, Javier Centeno, Mick Ackaway, to my cutman, Mike Basil, to even my father was the fourth, Jimmy Cambosis, which I'll tell a funny story with that as well. You know, you want to have trust in your team because, again, you could be taking a lot of punishment. And, again, as much as you don't want to stop the fight, I expect my corner to have that trust and to throw in the towel or stop the fight because we want to leave that ring and go back to our kids and family. Now, his corner, you know, they didn't do a right job. His cut man took forever to get in the ring. You know, his dad was giving the wrong information. They had no game plan.
Yeah, the game plan was take him out.
Yep. And that's not a game plan. We had a perfect game plan.
Yeah.
Round by round. We executed it round by round. Now, these guys had no game plan, and that's, you know, that's on them.
I think after he beat Lomachenko, they had this idea that he was the next superstar, and he was going to steamroll you and steamroll everybody else. And because he's such a heavy puncher, and the way he fought, like with that super stiff jab with Lomachenko and like real aggressive, and the fact that he was able to maintain that pace throughout the entire 12-round fight. And Lomachenko, I think it was in the 11th, he put it on him a little. He really got to him, and Lopez survived that and then came back to win the 12th.
I knew from that fight that the size difference between myself and Lomachenko, obviously I'm a lot bigger, but my speed, my explosive power, the way I move and get in positions and throw, you know, punches and combinations that are quite awkward shots that you don't see.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that I would have that advantage, you know, and I was never going to wait. I was going to come in there like I did in round one, take the shots, be prepared to take shots, and obviously, you know, land my shots as well and put him down and show my what I'm about and get my respect. But that's on them. They made a big mistake there with the corner. They did have a very good coach that they usually use, but they didn't have him. For whatever reason,
I was talking to my friend Radio Raheem today. We were talking. He's a giant boxing fan. Yeah. You know, Radio. He does a lot of those interviews on YouTube, and just he's a real expert,
a real good guy too,
great guy. And we were talking, and he said something I wholeheartedly agree with. He said it's very rare that a father son team works out.
Yeah.
In terms of like trainer and boxer, it's just very rare.
It's hard because that. Again, that emotion,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's your father and obviously the son, but it doesn't work out. You know, you see it time and time again.
Mm-hmm.
My father, you know, he was the fourth. You know, even that his job was to put the seat in the ring, you know, and get a bit of ice and that's it. Even though things went a little bit crazy when I started bleeding and the cut man was screaming at my father, wipe him up. You know, and he's like, wait a minute, my job's only this when we went through the pre-fight plan. So he was like, okay, let me get the towel, let me find a towel and wipe him up. But, you know, when you got that head coach being your father, like they do, a lot of times doesn't work. You know, you need someone to be able to, you know, that's the rules. That's what you got to do. You got to be able to, you know, respect, you know, the trainer. And I don't think they had that.
Yeah, I don't think it's impossible. I think it can be done with the right personalities. But oftentimes, the problem is, it seemed like in the Lopez corner, you know, his dad was so accustomed to Lopez just fucking everybody up that he thought that he was going to wake up eventually and catch you.
And catch me,
yeah.
It's for a certain fighters, you know, it works. But when you come against a guy that was prepared to die in that ring, as scary as it is, and as much as, you know, I trust my corner, I was honestly prepared to die in that ring. And I told my wife before we went to the arena that I'm prepared to die tonight. If anything happens, you know, everything's for the kids and yourself. I'm here to win this fight by any means. That's the kind of fighter. And the shots that I took in that fight, you know, I think he takes out any other lightweight in the world. That was some big shots. But I just kept coming, you know. And I know for a fact, when he did put me down in round 10, and I got up and survived that round and finished that round strong as well. And this is the like a Rocky IV movie. He came back into that corner and he said it to his team and his cornerman that, you know, this guy's made of steel. You know, I can't put a dent in him. And I know psychologically that would have broken him as well. That's why that round 11 was so successful. That round 11, you know, really showed what I was about.
It really did. And the fact that you came out as hard in round 11 as you had in round 1, you know, and maybe even harder because you had something to prove. I mean, You were letting him know that that knockdown is not how the rest of this fight is going
to
go.
No, this was a testament to myself and how hard I prepared for this fight. I just want to show how great I am, especially in them last two rounds. I've been put down, and again, in life you get put down. Sometimes things don't go the way you expect them to go, but you rise and you finish whatever you're trying to achieve, you know, with everything you have. You know, the thing is too that, you know, I lost my grandfather, you know, about 2.5 months before the fight. I had my baby as well, my son, on the same day. And I know he was there with me, my grandfather.
So the day your grandfather died, your son was born?
Yes. Well, wow. My son was born. And then 6 hours later, my grandfather passed away, George Kambosos. You know, so in that, when I got put down and I just got up, honestly, I felt like he lifted me up. I didn't even realize I'm up again. I'm ready. You know, that there is
wow.
Even in the dressing room, the design cameras came out and had the flashlight. We had the Aussie flag and the Greek flag, and we had them tied up pretty tight. Half of the Greek flag fell and it came down. And all of a sudden, I felt this touching presence on my shoulder. I thought, okay. I looked at my father, I go, he's here. I guess he is. And I knew at that moment that I will not be beat. I am winning this fight. You know, he's with me, and you know, I got the job done.
Now, this, it originally was not with DAZN, right? It was originally a trailer fight?
Yes, yeah.
What happened with all that?
Look, everything was great until Lopez tested positive for COVID.
Mm.
And then everything went downwards. You know, postponements, date changes, you know, venue changes.
Mm-hmm.
As a fighter, and again, Lopez as well, we are preparing for a fight. You know, you can't expect the fighter to be making weight, to have the right sparring, the right preparation. And all of a sudden they said, okay, let's move it back again. It just doesn't work that way. So
they tried to move it back several weeks, right? Like
originally we had, I think, 5 or 6 different dates.
Yeah.
So we had a certain date, September 11th we heard. Then we heard about October 4th. Then they went to October 5th. Then they went to October 16th. So,
were they changing because they were looking for a new venue? Was it like that there was competition? There was something else on television that night? Like, why were they doing that?
All of them. All of them. There was, yeah, everything. Yeah. There was certain NFL games. There was the baseball games that clashed with the same night. There was venues that all of a sudden they'll change and go to another venue. So, look, that's on them. You know, they missed out. It's a learning curve for them. You know, there's no disrespect. You know, it is what it is. And, you know, they would have seen the fight. They would have seen a fight of the year, and they missed out on it.
Well, they got the fight of the year when it was supposed to happen.
Yes.
You know?
Yep.
Now, after the fight, it was crazy when he came over and said that he thought he won, and that he thought he won. I mean, he went 9-3 or 10-2. Is that what he said?
Originally, he said 11-2. So,
well, that doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense. And honestly, I believe he was concussed. I honestly believe he was concussed because not only he said 11-2, and then he said, I haven't been with my son for so long. He was only born a couple of days ago. So nothing made sense. I felt that he was concussed. That's why I said, you're too delusional.
Mm.
But I was so respectful. And again, I got no anger to him. I'm not here to put him down or trash him. He's a young kid. He lost all his belts. He got beaten up. And
Sometimes that happens when you get knocked down in the first round and you fight the rest of the fight almost on autopilot.
Yeah, concussed, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that right hand was so clean.
Yeah.
And when you watch his eyes roll back and he sits down, then he got up and he's fighting off, easily could have been concussed.
Well, the way he looked at me too, and he thought, okay, what was that?
Yeah.
Shit, I'm in a fight now.
Well,
I said, okay, forget the first round now. Let's go. Now from round two, now I want to show you.
Well, what's interesting, though, is now they're talking about him moving up to 140 because the weight cut's too brutal. So they're coming up with a reason for why he lost.
Yep.
You know, they're saying that. And then on top of that, there's this new thing that they're saying, that he had an esophageal tear. Yep. and that his lungs were filled up and his body cavity was filled up with air. And they were saying that he went into the fight like that. But when you go through a brutal fight like the one you two went through, and you hit him with, how many body shots did you hit him with?
A lot of body work.
A lot of body, and shots to the neck as well. Yep. I mean, you hit him everywhere.
Everywhere.
So if you're hit, like, why would they assume that the tear was before the fight when you went through that brutal a fight? It's so crazy.
Look, again, very delusional.
Yeah.
And there was nothing before the fight when he was screaming, you know, and the videos of him screaming at the post of me saying, I'm going to eat you. I'm going to rip you. Okay, you look good there. And leading up in the press conference, you're going to go to hospital, everything. Okay. And then after the fight, you thought you won 11-2. You know, you're there telling the world. And then you still got enough energy to do your backflip.
Right.
He went around and done his backflip.
Yeah, with an esophageal tear.
With a tear. Yeah. So if there was something there,
right,
you know, you wouldn't be screaming. You wouldn't be doing backflips.
Yeah, it's so hard to tell. Because, like, is the doctor exaggerating? Is it something that he sustained during the fight? Who knows?
I want to know who's the actual doctor.
Yes.
So, look, it is what it is. There's been a lot of excuses. And
he didn't fight like a guy who was compromised, like his endurance was compromised.
No, because in round 10, he landed that shot. Exactly. He was still coming the whole night. He was still throwing punches.
Yeah.
But when you're getting, you know, badly, you know, attacked, and my shots are landing, and the body work that I was landing, you know, and the placement of the shots, who are you going to feel all types of ways?
Yeah.
You know, so
all kinds of damage.
The funny thing is, Deontay Wilder, when he came out with his excuses, and they bashed him online about that.
Yeah.
They came out so vocal, doing the same thing. But look, the champion that I am, I respect them. You know, all the best to whatever they do in the future. If they want to, you know, give me my praise, respect me, so be it. You know, the kind of person I am, through a mutual, you know, person that we both know, I sent a video to him, you know, wish him all the best, you know, heal up with the cuts. This was before anything had come out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I knew the face would be pretty damaged. And just to keep going, because you hear things that he doesn't want to fight no more. So, you know, he's a talented kid. You just beat Lomachenko. You knocked out Richard Comey. You beat all these guys. Again, one loss doesn't define you. So the kind of person I am, I reached out. Did I receive anything back? No.
What are you going to do? With the thought of him moving up to 140 pounds, which is interesting, because, you know, post-fight, when there's a fight like that, it takes a while for the dust to settle, especially when he got hit with a lot of big shots and he's badly cut and battered. When the dust settles, if he chooses to go up to 140, do you see yourself ever fighting at 140?
At this stage, there's so much unfinished business at 135. And because I make the weight so good, you know, there's no vision of 140 right now.
Yeah.
But once I take all these guys out, the Haneys, Gervonta Davis, you know, Ryan Garcia, if he gets his act together and starts fighting, Lomachenko, cause that's my plan, to take them all out. And even in the next fight, there will be no tune-up fight. It'll be straight in there again against a big, big name. So once we handle that business, then we'll look at moving up to 140.
Did you watch Gervonta's fight?
I was there.
Were you there? Oh, okay.
You know, and the crazy thing was, you know, before the fight, they showed the cameras and they were showing all the basketball players there. And all of a sudden, they showed me and the applause that I got. I couldn't believe it. I thought, this is unbelievable. This is crazy.
You're a star now, man.
It's growing. But, you know, it's been that, the way I looked at it was, you know, I was a rough cut diamond. You know, I knew what I had.
Yeah.
My team knew what we had. And it's just had to keep polishing it and keep shining. And now it's shining. And the world can see it. And they can see the person I am. You know, I'm a confident fighter. But outside of the ring, you know, I am who I am.
Your performance was so good.
Thank you.
Now, when you see what happened with Lopez when he beat Lomachenko, it was kind of a similar thing.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that made him. That's what made his star rise. And then you came along and
took the star.
Yeah, you took the star. You ruined the party. But what do you think is the big fight in that division? Is it Gervonta?
I think Haney or Tank.
Yeah,
they're the big names.
Either one.
Either one.
Yeah.
Now,
They're all fighting. It's really interesting because everyone's on kind of the same schedule.
Yeah, which is fantastic.
Yeah, and everyone's fighting within the month.
We started it. I started the big fight, you know, and I gave a fight of the year. Then I was at the Haney fight, watching ringside, and we had our little a chat as well after the fight with the cameras there, which was all respect, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was at the tank fight as well, and I know he walked past. He could see me there with the cameras and everyone, you know, trying to get interviews, and he wanted nothing to do with it. So we'll see now. You know, the ball's in my court. I get to pick, but also they need to present now. Who wants the fight?
Yeah.
It's got to be presented now.
Did they get a medical analysis of Gervonta's hand?
I'm not sure yet. Yeah, so that there is probably going to be an issue. But yeah. I hope that the hand is okay.
Yeah, hopefully it's not a break.
Because if we do go with Tank, you know, I don't want no more excuses. I'm sick of hearing excuses from these guys.
Yeah, well, that's to me. Well, either way, Haney's amazing too. Yep. It'd be a fantastic.
They're great
fight.
Fighters. They're great. Yeah. Lopez is a great fighter as well.
Yes.
And I'm so privileged to be the champion right now at this, you know, division. 135 pounds is the hottest division in the world.
It really is.
So to be ruling it and the emperor at the division.
The emperor.
Because you got the four kings.
Yes. So right.
We came out with a cool little thing that. They can be the four kings, but the emperor, you know, our ways are more.
I like it. Now, when, you know, you look at that division, I mean, it's arguable that that's the most stacked division in boxing.
Yeah.
With Lomachenko, is he going to drop down to 130 or is he going to fight, he's going to remain at 135? Because he's the smallest guy in the division, right?
Yeah, he's the smallest guy. Obviously, he's come from 126, 130. And I give him a lot of respect because he brought most of them belts to the Lopez fight.
Yeah.
So, you know, he does deserve a shot as well. But as well, he did lose to Lopez. So
he's fighting soon, right?
He fights this weekend.
Oh, this weekend. Yeah,
against Richard Comey, who was the one that Lopez knocked out in round two to capture his first title.
Okay, so he's fighting another 135-pound fight. And is this just is it a 10-rounder or is it a 12-rounder?
I believe it's a 12-rounder non-title fight.
Non-title fight. And because I know that he had talked after the Lopez fight about possibly going back down to 130, but he was another one. He thought he won that fight, which is crazy.
No, Lopez won that fight. As much as the lead up, I was taking shots at Lopez and saying, oh, it was a close fight, you know, or maybe a draw. He was injured, whatever there was, but he did win the fight.
Yeah. You know, to deny that Lopez controlled most of the fight seems to me to be kind of silly. And to hear from Lomachenko was kind of surprising, I thought.
And again, too, he came out with, you know, the excuses, which it made him look worse because he put out the videos of the highlights and showed the world, look what I did, but the world saw.
Yeah.
See, I've always been that you lose.
Yeah.
If it comes one day, take it on the chin. You beat me. You know, take it like a man. These guys, they can't accept it.
I want a fighter to come out of a fight and then put the highlights of his opponent punching him in the face.
Punch the shit out of him.
Nobody ever does that.
No.
Like,
no.
We saw that part too, man.
Yeah, well, the world saw it. And that's why with Lopez coming out and saying, I won the fight, the whole world, whatever, saw it, blah, blah, blah. I said, man, the whole world saw this.
Yeah.
You know, the arena, your own fans are booing you now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a crazy thing too, because when I walked inside that arena, I was getting booed like crazy.
Yeah, but that's the thing about Brooklyn, man. If you're fighting a Brooklyn fighter, you know, you're going to get booed. But if you beat them, they're going to applaud you.
Yeah.
They're going to cheer you. You won them over.
And that's what I did. I stood on that ring before I entered the ropes inside, and I just stared at them like a gladiator, like a Roman gladiator, like a Spartan warrior. And I could see them booing. They're doing all types of stuff. I said, okay, you boo me now. But I tell you, by the end of this fight, you're going to applaud. And when that round 12 was done, and I stood on the ropes and I'm bleeding and Eddie Hearn's there clapping like you couldn't believe it, like a little kid. And I'm wiping the blood off my face and I'm showing the crowd and say, this is for you guys.
Wow.
They're going crazy. That's, you know, I'm old school.
You talked about the difficulty in coming from Australia and getting over here and competing. Do you think that you'll set up your next training camp here and bring everybody over in advance? Would that make it easier if you're fighting here? Or do you think you could lure somebody to Australia for a big money fight?
Yeah.
Which, I mean, you'd probably sell out a fucking giant arena in Australia right now, right?
Australia is the plan. You know, I think I've earned that. I deserve that. I've been on the road since 2017.
Yeah, you need one at home, right?
I need one at home. And look, you got the beautiful Marvel Stadium. They had Adesanya and Whittaker there.
Yeah.
You know, that there would be 70, 80,000 people. They'll be packed to the rafters. You know, Melbourne is fantastic because there's 600,000 Greeks. It's the second biggest Greek population outside of Athens.
Really?
So me being such a proud Greek, they are going nuts back home. They are smashing every plate they have. You know, it's been crazy. So that is the plan. I know Haney's up for it. I know Lomachenko's up for it.
Mm.
Tank, I don't know if he wants to come to Australia. I don't even know if he can get into Australia, to be honest.
Well,
he has a lot of certain charges on himself.
Oh, does he?
So I don't know if he can get in there, but we'll see. You know.
Yeah. Do you have a preference, the fight that you think would be the bigger fight?
All of them, yeah.
All of them.
It's just, again, two of them have had their fights. They show a lot because I was looking for excitement, entertainment. I feel like I put a lot of pressure. Mm-hmm. My presence just being there. And I kind of feel bad for the Haney-Diaz fight week because when I rocked up into Vegas, it was all about me, you know. And I kind of feel bad. And even like when they had their post-fight press conference, they wanted me in there. And I said, no, I'm not going in there because it's their time. Let them enjoy their moment.
I watched that fight for the first time today in the gym.
Yeah. It was a good fight. He's very sharp. Haney, he boxes very nice.
And Diaz,
but Diaz brought
made
it too.
Him work.
And
yeah.
Diaz is not a natural 135-pounder. He's small. So when you put someone like me, who's fast and strong and a lot bigger, you know, it's a different story.
Well, it's an exciting matchup with either one of those three.
It really is.
The compelling thing about Lomachenko is Lomachenko's that defeat to Lopez was kind of shocking to a lot of people.
Yep.
And having you just beating Lopez, he has the opportunity to kind of get it back a little.
Get one back, yeah.
Yeah, if he could get you. And also, he's a giant name.
Yeah, he really is. And again, you know, any one of these three guys in Australia, Marvel Stadium, it's gonna be a sold-out attendance.
It's
a beautiful arena. That arena is beautiful. And the way it's set where it can be open for the undercard and the co-main, and then on the main event to be closed. I've already envisioned that.
You hear the sound even more because it echoes off the ceiling.
It's like a nighttime for the broadcast here in America.
I'd love to go, but that 16-hour flight can kiss my ass.
Yeah, it is hard. And I got it tonight. I'm flying back home tonight.
Oof, I've done it a bunch of times. I did a bunch of UFC cards over there. It's rough. And you just bewildered for weeks afterwards. You're so confused. And I wanted to talk to you about that. Like, what is that like when you do your preparation and then you come over here for a fight? How much time do you have to give yourself?
Usually in my last fights, I've been here for 8 weeks, 10 weeks. You know, at points I'd bring my whole family, my kids over. But for the start of this preparation, I was here for 4 months before he tested positive for COVID. You know, I was here by myself. And then my father and my Australian coach came over. You know, so we had the preparation here. We were accustomed to the time difference. Everything was perfect. Then when he tested positive for COVID, I said, I don't know how long he's going to be till he's ready to get inside them ropes again. Mm. This could take forever.
Right.
I can't just stop my life. I've got to get back home. I've got to go be with my kids. I've got to be a father. So we flew back home. We've done that bloody quarantine for 2 weeks, which is not easy. And then, continued preparation in Australia. Then I flew back 2.5 weeks out for
this
fight.
That's not a lot.
So it wasn't a lot, but I knew because I've done this trip so many times that my body would be accustomed.
Is it harder to go back there or to come over here?
It's harder to go back.
They say that. Yeah. I've heard that. Someone's trying to explain that to me and I don't understand it.
I found that coming here, because you don't lose any time, you literally leave 10 in the morning in Australia, and by the time you get here, it's still the same day. 6 or 7 in the morning. So
which is fucking crazy.
It's unbelievable. It's like I could train. I've thought about this, how mad I am with my training. I could train just before I get on that flight and I can get to LA and I can train again. So that means I've done 2 sessions and lost no time. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, that is crazy. And when you do that, do you try to train the moment you land just to try to kill
straight away,
kill a jet lag?
I need to train. I need to sweat. Mm-hmm. And then I go to bed. I have a good sleep. And then I'm up. I feel great.
That seems the only way to settle it is a hard workout, right?
Yeah, you need to have the hard workout. And I've told guys coming over, because I've done it so many times, I said, as soon as you land, don't sleep. As much as you want to sleep, do not sleep. Just do a light session. Just shadow box for 3-4 rounds. Go for a little jog. Just get something going. Mm. You know, your body can start to tick over. And it's crazy how the body is.
Yeah.
To think that a small workout like that can get you set and, you know, help with the jet lag.
Yeah, there's something about the circadian rhythm apparently that gets reset by a brutal workout.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, and they also say you should try to not eat on the flight, which I've never done.
Yeah, well, the plane food. Yeah. I don't touch that anyway because that stuff is that's brutal.
You know? Do you bring your own food?
I bring small snacks and I hydrate a lot.
Yeah.
So coming over, you know, I was hydrating with the stuff that I take nonstop. You know, like I had maybe 3-4 liters on that flight.
Oh my God, you must be peeing every 5 minutes.
And I was up and down. Once it hit, I was like, oh man. And my Australian coach is looking at me and goes,
again?
Far out. It was only like 10 minutes ago. But yeah.
That's
and
funny.
And the people on the plane thinking, this guy, right? Why is he keep going up and down to the toilet?
Doing coke in the bathroom.
Doing something, yeah.
Are you very strict with your diet?
Very strict.
Yeah?
Very strict.
Like what's a normal meal like for you?
You know, I have a high protein, so my chicken, my turkey, you know, lean beef, and then I like my complex carbs, you know, my sweet potato, my pumpkin, you know, some brown rice, some quinoa, and then from there, you know, my salad, my veggies, you know, and that's it, yeah, clean, super clean.
Do you have someone prepare meals for you?
Not really. My wife, obviously, when we're at home together, but when I'm here, I'm doing most of it myself, and I enjoy it. You know, I love the aspect of the nutrition, you know, eating right, getting the right fuel into your body, because a lot of fighters, they train unbelievable, but all of a sudden they stuff up on the nutrition. They stuff up with the post-weighing, you know, the right meals. Straight after the weighing, I had my hydration and I had a meal ready to go. Mm. My turkey, my avocado, you know, the good fats, the good protein, you know, to put all the good stuff back into me.
Now, have you worked with a nutrition to develop this meal plan, or
very early in my career? I think I was still an amateur. I did go to a nutritionist, learn a couple facts, and then the rest was just my own study, trial and error. You know, I'd sit there and, you know, I'd have a big sparring session, you know, on a certain date, and I'd work on things leading into that sparring session, see how I felt. So, you can have a nutritionist, you can have a dietitian team, but it depends how your body feels. You know, what might work for you might not work for me. So,
right.
You know, I've come to a point where I know exactly what I got to do to make the weight, to have the right energy. But again, I'm always open to learn. That's why I study so much on it. And I'm always open to learn more and more.
And how did you come to turkey and chicken? Did you try seafood? Do you eat meat, like red meat?
I do. I eat meat, red meat. I just love turkey and chicken, the high protein about it. You know, it just sits good in my stomach, but as well, a lot of prawns as well.
Prawns?
Because they're a high protein, low calorie, you know, so that there, I was having a fair bit leading into this fight, and it was unbelievable with the weight, you know, best I've ever felt, easiest I've ever made weight, and...
What's like the heaviest you ever get?
Probably 147.
Oh, that's not bad at all.
I checked my weight 2 days ago, and obviously I've been eating a little bit more now, because I just had a big win. Mm-hmm. I think it was like 140. I was like 144.
Oh.
Yeah, so like 9 pounds.
Not bad.
It's crazy. I could make the weight. That's why I said to Eddie, if you want to put me on, pull one of these guys out.
You're really serious?
Oh, serious. He goes, you got stitches. I go, don't worry about the stitches. Let it open up. It makes the fight even better.
That's hilarious. Yeah. Imagine if you actually did that. Imagine if like someone's opponent fell out and you had to step in on that short of notice.
Imagine using the same fight shorts full of blood. Lopez's blood, perfect. My blood,
oh my
whoever
God.
I was going to fight their blood.
Boy, that would be a great story.
It'd be cool.
And, you know, also maximize your time before you have to go back home.
Yeah. Well, you might as well. Yeah. You've got that big trip. So if you can get 2 fights in,
right,
you make the trip worth it.
Yeah, for sure. Do you take any supplements, vitamins, anything like that?
A lot of vitamins. Yeah. My glutamine, you know, my immune boosters, my vitamin C's, my B12s, my zinc. Fish oils, all the good stuff.
And have you learned this from nutritionists, or is this
again,
trial and error
again,
as well?
Again, trial and error.
Maybe research online?
Yeah, research, trial and error.
Yeah.
You know, listen to other athletes, listen to other fighters, you know, see how it feels, introduce it. If it doesn't feel good, take it out. If it feels good, leave it.
Here you are now, you just come off this huge win. When you're preparing, for another fight, you know, it's going to be a few months at least.
Yep.
What do you do in the meantime? Do you go back to work and work on, technical aspects of your game? Do you do strength and conditioning? Do you do all the above? Like, what do you do in the downtime?
A bit of everything.
Yeah.
You know, my whole theory and thing about it is every day I'm going to get better and better. And I was in the gym this morning before we were here. I love it. I love training. So the big thing now is to continue my strength conditioning, get a little bit bigger, get a little bit stronger. I have room and time to be able to get bigger. I make the weight very easy, but still keep my speed and my explosive, you know, snap and power, because that is a big factor in my game. That's one thing I never want to lose. Perfecting the punches a little bit more, you know, work on that shot that I landed on Lopez in round one. And if I threw it maybe a little bit more with an angle, I might have put him to sleep at that moment. So we keep working. There's so much more to do. You know, in that fight, the world might have thought that they've seen the best of Kambosos, but, you know, for me, I feel like that was 15%. There was so much
15.
More to go. Yeah, honestly, there was moments in that fight where I said, come on, throw that shot, and they weren't coming off. So I know that there is a lot more. But once I sit down and watch the fight, I'll be able to, you know, analyze it even more and game plan and, you know, get the notebook out and go through it all, start writing the mistakes.
It's interesting because that is the mentality that makes a true champion, someone who's never satisfied with their performance and always wants to do better.
Yeah, it is. I'm never content. You know, I just won the Undisputed Championship. You know, I have not even, you know, had one celebration drink. You know, I have been so focused. I've been in Vegas. I've been in LA. I'm here now. Not one celebration drink. You know, that's the kind of fighter I am and dedicated to this sport.
You got the Ring Magazine belt, which is, by many people, they think that that's probably like the most unbiased of the belts. Yeah. Because if you look at the regulatory bodies, they all have their own mandatory challengers. And there's a lot of shenanigans that go on with that. Is, you know, so now you have the IBF, you have the WBO, and you have the Ring Magazine title.
I have the IBF, WBO, Ring Magazine, WBA Super title, which is, you know, the best WBA belt you can get. And I also have the WBC franchise belt, which is, to me, it's a super title as well. I know Haney has a WBC belt, and, you know, the way the WBC has set this up is, you got a super champion, a guy who, you know, cannot have any mandatories, can be able to maneuver, you know, and have options to do what they want to do, which I like, because the last thing you want to do is be caught up in a mandatory where it doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can maneuver where I have to. So,
how'd you get to become a super champion? How's that work?
Well, Lopez was a super champion. Right, he had everything. So,
how does one become a super champion? What is their
I think it's when you've defended the belt certain times, they elevate you to a point. But
seems odd, right?
It is, you know, I'm old school, and yeah. You know, I love all the belts. You know, they're my. You know, they're my pride now. You know, they're like my kids now. It's like I've got five new kids. You know, but I'm old school. And if they can eventually just have one champion be recognized. And that Ring Magazine does do that.
Yeah, the Ring Magazine is...
That you're the lineal champion. Right. You're the number one in the division. And that's what I am right now. But I love all the belts too. I respect that. And it looks so cool to have all these beautiful belts.
Oh, yeah. There's nothing better than watching a guy walk to the ring just showered in belts when he wins. You know, you're just draping them all over you.
Everywhere, yeah. The problem is now trying to get back home with all these belts, it's like, it's a mission.
Do you have to check them? I would never check those things.
No, I'm taking them with me. I'm boarding them with me.
We
get to the airport, and like even yesterday, you know, we get to the airport in LA, and as we're going through customs, they open them up, they check them. Okay, there's another one. Check it. Then the bag comes. There's another one. Look, how many did you get? A fair few. So that's part of my entourage now. My belts.
Yeah, for but sure.
I've worked hard to get them, and you know, like I said, this is not the end. This is going to be a long reign. It was 15% of what the world saw.
Well, enjoy it and take it in, because you deserve every minute of it. You say you work on a little bit of everything, but talk me through like a typical day in training. Are you working out twice a day? Do you do strength and conditioning, road work? Like, what's a normal day for you?
Usually three sessions a day.
Three sessions.
Yeah. That's how I feel. That's why I have that conditioning. You know, I'd have my strength conditioning early in the morning.
And what would that consist of?
All types of things. Your resistance, your heavy lifts, you know, your load work where you're going down on a certain count. As you get closer to the fight, your resistance bands and the speed work, the explosive power. your speed and agility work, part of that strength conditioning cycle in the morning. And then we go to our boxing in the afternoon, early afternoon, where you're doing your pad work, your sparring, your bag work, your game planning, your shadow boxing, everything that is involved, you know, to get to that level of the top. And then later at night I'm running, I'm on the road, I'm doing my road work. I love the road work, especially at the end, because you've put in the hard work to, you know, get up again and say, okay, I've got to do my road work now. Even that I'm fit, I'm ready, push a little bit more. And my trainers have to hold me back sometimes. They're like, don't do it. You know, you're ready. But, you know, I know how my body feels and I know what it takes to get to that next level. So three sessions a day is the usual.
Did you develop this schedule of three sessions a day?
It's again trial and error, a lot of trial and error. So you know, you as a young amateur, you know, you start off with one session a day, and you see the professionals in the gym when you're watching them, and you know, idolize these guys. You know, you say, okay, they're training twice a day, I've got to do two sessions a day. So you get that, and then as you get to the next level, the elite level, you think, no, I need to do more work. I need to get better and better. You know, like Manny Pacquiao as well. You know, he puts in two, three a day, every day. Yeah, pretty much every day.
When you do your strength and conditioning, do you work with a physical trainer?
I got a strength and conditioning coach. Yeah, Mirawani from Ethos Performance. They got a couple of UFC guys that you would know, Shui, Bam Bam Tuivasa.
Oh, beautiful.
Tyson Pedro.
He's fighting next weekend.
I wish I could go. Yeah, I would have loved to be there, but I need to get home. My kids are missing dad and mum. So
I understand.
We've got some good guys. We've got a really good team out there. The strength and conditioning is very important. Massive aspect of the game.
Do you do different work when you're not in camp versus when you're in camp in terms of strength and conditioning? I mean, do you have specific stuff you do to ramp up for a fight?
Yeah. So now, obviously, the fight is done.
Right.
My goal is to get back and do heavier lifts, build that more strength, push my body to the next level. And we got all the data, and we got everything from every past fight that I've been working with this team. And we can see the figures continually go up. Now, if them numbers and figures didn't go up in the next preparation, I don't feel right, because I'm always trying to get better and better every day. So we'll put in the heavy strength work now to build that power, to build that next level numbers. And then as the camp progresses, the date will get locked in, then we start to pinpoint, okay, we're sparring on these certain dates. We need more speed here. We need more explosiveness in this part. We maneuver everything as the fight, you know, gets locked in, and as we go through camp.
Is there any concern when you're doing the strength and conditioning that you might put on too much weight?
Not really.
No?
No, I trust the team, and my body type never really blows out too much. I can't really put on too much, you know, mass amount of weight and muscle. So I'm always very confident that no matter what, I will make the weight comfortably.
Well, especially when you can see it too.
Yeah, you can see it, and that's right. You know, the strength conditioning is one aspect, but when you're boxing, you know, and you're losing so many calories, and then you're running on the road and doing your 45-minute to 1 hour road work, you know, you're always going to be in that peak condition. The body type is going to be very similar.
Do you have specific foods that you eat right post-workout, like to try to recover? Because when you're training three a day, one of the most important things is refueling the muscles before you give it a go again in a couple hours.
Well, I used to have, obviously, your protein shakes and all the good stuff to get back into you, but I took it out of my system, the protein. I thought, you know what, I don't need it.
Yeah.
My body feels great. There was a time where I missed it for a few times, and I go, you know what, I feel good, I feel better. So I took that out. You know, I'd rather, you know, have the good food, you know, the eggs.
Real food.
The real food,
yeah.
You know, the spinach, the broccoli, the veggies. I still put in my glutamine with my hydration, because it's very important, you know, to get the lactic acids and keep that hydration up. But real food, you know, my body's never looked better, and I'm on real food.
Yeah, I agree with you on the real food thing. I think the best thing about protein shakes is when you're on the go and you need to get calories and you need protein, and you could down a shake. But
that's right.
I really prefer real food too, and I think I prefer that athletes eat real food.
Yeah. Well, the thing is too, when you're a professional and you're working, you know, nonstop in the gym, and this is your craft. You know, I don't have to go to a job. I don't have other work. So you take the time. You use your time management. And I learned that from Manny Pacquiao too. Time management is very important. The guy's a senator. Mm-hmm. He'll come straight from the Senate in his suit.
Right to the gym.
Straight into the gym.
That's crazy.
Hand wraps are on. into the rounds.
That's crazy.
So the time management is very important.
Yeah.
And making sure that you have the food, the prep, you finish your session, get the right food into you, have the vitamins and everything that you take.
Do you eat a lot of fruit? Do you eat fruit like pre-workout at all?
I do have, yeah, a fair bit of fruit. You know, your watermelons, your antioxidant, your berries, you know, your blueberries, your strawberries, your raspberries, even coconut meat. You know, I love the coconut meat. Mm. You know, the good fats, the good stuff into you. You know, your pineapple. Everything is got a, it's a formula to get to this position.
And this is, again, all stuff that you tweaked over time.
Learned myself, trial and error. You know, I'll try something, and I don't feel good with that. Don't need it. This, okay, that's beautiful. I need it. My weight, I see where my weight bounces to. Some certain things you'll take and, you know, put into your system, and, you know, the weight will fluctuate too high. It's okay. Mm. No, don't need that.
Now, when it comes to recovery, when you're doing these kind of brutal workouts and you're doing something like that three times a day, do you do anything for recovery, in terms of like massage, sauna, ice baths?
Yeah, we do our massages, but the biggest thing I'm on is 3 to 4 times a week, I'm in the Epsom bath, hot bath, Epsom salts. I know that, you know, the ice baths are a big thing, but... you know, I just can't put myself in that ice.
Really?
It's just too cold. Yeah, I just hate it. I used to do it as a young kid, an amateur. I used to love it. But I think because I got so hooked on the Epsom salt baths and the heat that my body can't deal with the cold now.
Really?
You know, so that. But again, I do try to have the cold showers. You know, I started learning a little bit more about Wim Hof. Mm-hmm. And then seeing the cold, start with the cold showers and you start to get better and better with it. So
yeah, but Wim Hof would tell you needed to go into the plunge.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what he said. Look, you guys start with the showers first and then you make your way. So hopefully in another couple of weeks, I'll be able to get back in the cold baths.
It's interesting that you used to do it.
Yeah, it's crazy. As an amateur, and I'll do it. And, you know, when I was in Sydney, we got the baths there in the gym. You know, this gym is unbelievable. You know, Just Boxing, and they've set up actually a hot bath and a cold bath with an ice machine, everything pretty much for me.
Oh, nice.
And, you know, after a session, they got it set up. Like, hey, it'll be easy, it'll be all right, no problem. But I hadn't done it for a while, you know, for a long time actually. So when I got in there, I was in there for about 30 seconds and I'm like, hyperventilating, I've got to get out. I've got to actually get out. You're a beast. What's wrong? Everyone's like, what's wrong with you? You fight all these guys. I said, I don't care about that. I go, I am getting out of this bath. I don't care. I go, I put my body through enough pain. This ain't going to do nothing. Get me out of here. I went home and had an Epsom bath.
I don't know, man. I'm telling you, it helps you recover. Yeah. I know it sucks.
The cryotherapy as well.
That's good.
Yeah,
that's
great. I do that. That there is no problem. The 3 minutes, I can do that.
I feel like I've done cryotherapy and I've done the cold plunge, and I think the cold plunge is superior.
Yeah,
I really
do. Yeah, it is. It is.
Yeah. It's just like when you get to that 33, 34 degree temperature and you go neck deep.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
You're making me cold right now just thinking about it. I'm thinking of that. I think I'm traumatized. I'm thinking of that ice bath in
my
the gym.
My favorite is sauna, straight to ice bath, back to sauna. Yeah. That's the best because you get to the sauna to the point where you just can't be in there anymore. Yeah. Like 20 minutes in, I do like 185. 20 minutes in at 185 degrees Fahrenheit, and then right into the cold plunge. Freeze my dick off for like 3 minutes and then back
and then
to the sauna.
Back in, yeah.
When you get back to the sauna, that 185 feels like nothing.
Feels like nothing, yeah.
Like nothing.
What's the old school, you know, in Russia and the Soviet Union, they all do that.
Yes.
I've seen that firsthand. Yeah. I actually did it as an amateur. We were in Russia fighting in the amateurs, and they took us to the mountains with the snow, and they had this little, you know, hut with a sauna in there.
Yeah.
So wow, this is crazy. So we do the sauna and we run straight out into the snow and sit in the snow and do our angels in the snow and back in the sauna.
Yeah, they knew what they're doing, man. Yeah. You know, the first time I found out about that was, do you know who Fedor Emelianenko is?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So Fedor, we used to watch him prepare in Russia, and Fedor's arguably, if not the greatest heavyweight of all time, definitely in the argument of one of the greatest heavyweights of all time. There's probably three guys you can make that argument about, and Fedor's one of them. He might be the best. But he would do, they would call it a banya in the Soviet Union or in Russia.
Right.
And they'd do the hot bath, and they'd do the cold plunge, the hot bath. And I remember thinking about that. I'm like, this guy, everything he does is old school, yeah. and yet he's dominating everybody. He does kettlebells for his workouts and conditioning. Yeah, there they are.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they would, I mean, Russia's cold as fuck. Look at that. Yeah, they'd get in that freezing cold water. Yeah. And then they would go sauna to that, back and forth. But there's something about that. Oh, the sauna's back there? Yeah. There's something about that going back and forth that really just, it does something to you that makes you feel fantastic after workouts. It's just...
I think, yeah, with the way the body is, you know, I think from going to the cold and then the heat, you know, it just that relaxes the muscles, gets mm-hmm. the lactic acids out.
Yeah.
I think I need to introduce the cold.
Yeah, back you gotta into get it. In yeah, there,
I
know. Buddy.
I just love the Epsom salts, the heat.
Oh, I love that too.
I sweat. The weight management is great by doing it. But you know, if I add that in there as well,
you know, I'll what's phenomenal. Have you ever done a sensory deprivation tank?
I have. I actually done two of them before I came to the US.
Really?
And it was unbelievable.
That's all Epsom salts yeah. too. So it's not just good for the brain to think and float and relax, but it's amazing for your muscles because there's yeah. so much salt in there, way more than a regular yeah. Epsom bath.
I think 400 kilos. I think
there's
they put
a lot of salt
when
in
I was
there.
In
yeah.
there. The first one I did, you know, they told me that your mind will wander.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I went in there and trying to relax and, you know, I could hear the music and then they turned the music off so you let your brain, you know, relax. And then by the end, I was like, I can't just switch off. I just want to switch off. And all of a sudden, the music went back on to say that there's 10 more minutes to go. And just boom, just switched off. And all of a sudden, it's like, time. So that was the first one. I go, okay, this is yeah. great. So then the second one, you know, I really felt it. I really switched off, you know, let the mind wander.
Yes.
And I think you envision, and I was manifesting, you know, the belts winning this fight. Mm. So I was seeing it. It was amazing.
Yeah, that's the thing about it is that it takes a while to get relaxed.
Yeah.
But if you do it a bunch of times, then you become accustomed to it.
That's right, yeah.
But as far as a guy like you trying to envision winning titles and fighting, and I think it's a phenomenal tool. It's a phenomenal tool for anybody that is working on visualization yeah. because you're alone in the total silence, total darkness. You're floating. You don't even feel anything.
I'm very big on manifesting and visualizing it. Like my room in New York, it was overlooking Madison Square Garden. I could see it.
Oh, wow.
And literally every night I'm just there looking and I go, that's where I'm doing history. That's my history right there.
Mm.
I'm meant to be here. And literally before the fight, I'm there looking at it and I go, okay, that's the place. But
wow.
another little trick that I do is, you know, you got my diary that I write every day. I'd write three things that, you know, what I'm doing it for, what it means most. And obviously every time my kids, but, you know, you're writing for your legacy, for you know, your country, you know, all the little things that first thing in the morning. You're having your coffee, you write it down, and just sets me in a right path.
Yeah. Did you learn to do that? Is that something that was taught to you?
I believe it was Sugar Ray Leonard that was doing it as well. I saw it somewhere, and I go, you know what? This was leading into my world title eliminator. I said, okay, I'm going to try that. I'm going to do that. Let me see if it works. And just writing it down kicks off the day in a good place. You know. But the visualizing and manifesting and seeing it before it actually happens... From a young kid, I feel like I've always had this sixth sense, and I could just see it.
Really?
Yeah.
So have you always been a kid that's been very focused on very specific goals?
I have been, yeah. Always from a young kid, I put my brain and my focus onto something, I can achieve it, I can do it. You know, when I was young, you know, with obviously my family, there was no young kids around us. You know, I was born and then my sister came, you know, many years later. There was no cousins, so I was always hanging out with the older, you know, crowd and you know, the parents and my parents' friends. You know, so I think just from that young kid, that age, you know, you become a little bit more mature and you realize that you can visualize things. And yeah, I think something from there, you know, has transpired to where I am now as well.
When did you first think that you were going to become a boxer?
Look, I fell into boxing by luck. It really,
really
was. It was by luck. It wasn't because my father was a fighter. You know, it was by luck. I was playing rugby, you know, back in Australia, you know, as a 10, 11-year-old, you know, from starting at age 6. And that's all I wanted to do in my life. I wanted to be a footy player. But I was overweight. I was putting on a lot of weight. So in the off-season, my dad said, you know, we've got to do something here. You know, you're not going to be able to cut it next year. You're not going to make the A squad. I said, all right. Because we live not far from the beach, I guess we'll do nippers.
What's a nipper?
So a nippers is beach running.
Ah, you run. Why do you call it nippers?
I don't know. It's the Aussie. All my Aussie fans and people watching will be saying, okay, nippers.
Hell yeah, nippers.
Nippers. You don't know what nippers are? Come on, Joe. So I said, no way. You're not going to see this big 11-year-old obese kid running down the beach. You know, the fat signal ever, no chance. He goes, what about boxing? You like the Rocky movies? I said, yeah, let's try it out. So to get to the gym, we went down to the gym, the local, you know, community PCYC, they say, gym. Walking up to the stairs, the smell of the old school gym, you can smell the blood in there.
Mm.
Most kids turn around and say, no way. Especially being overweight and being bullied his whole life. But I walked in there, I felt at home. I go, wow, this is amazing.
Really?
So let's do it. So my dad
said,
Right away. So I put the gloves on. My dad said, hey, you're on your own. And that's the kind of little battles and little tricks that he would do. So you're on your own. I'll be back. I'll see when I pick you up. I fell in love with the sport.
Wow, right away.
All of a sudden, I lost all this weight. You know, I went down to, from 135 pounds, I probably went down to like 120, maybe a little bit less, 118. So everything changed. You know, the bullying kind of stopped. You know, my whole confidence grew. My footy got better. All of a sudden, instead of coming last, you know, in whatever we did, I was coming first. You know, so all of a sudden, you know, that passion for boxing, that real combat took over. So as I went back to the next year for rugby, you know, I was playing really good rugby and I got picked for a representative team. But at the same time, I was boxing and, you know, I made the state championships, the team. And I still love both, but boxing was everything I wanted to do and I wanted to take that to the next level. So with the representative team, they sat us down, the coaches sat us down and, you know, they said, okay, you'll be training Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And straight away I said, okay, Monday, Wednesday, Friday is when I have boxing on. That's not going to work. So I sat in the car with my father on the way home, had all the footy training gear, the rugby training gear, and he goes, how good is this? Something you want to do your whole life? He knew straight away. He could see my expression on my face. I said, yeah, but didn't you hear? I said, what? He knew already. He said, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, that's boxing. He said, yeah, well, you're going to have to make a decision. He goes, remember I was telling you about the crossroads? I go, I know what it is now, the crossroads. So this is like 11, 12 years of age. So he goes, look, it's a weekend now. I'm going to give you the weekend to think about it. Come Monday after I finish work, I want to see what bag's going to be here, the boxing bag or the footy bag, and we'll go where you want to go, where your heart is. So you make the decision. So I thought about it. I said, no, I'm going to be a fighter. You know, and my heart was there. And come Monday, boxing bag, boxing gloves, let's go.
How did your rugby coach handle that?
Look, they were upset because they saw how dedicated I was and what a good player I was, but they understood it because they knew that, you know, boxing was there and that's how I'd lost all that weight and become a good player. So they said, look, you know, whatever he wants to do, the kid made his decision, we support him. You know, and obviously they'll be looking at this now saying, well, he did, he went all the way and won the belts. Yeah, what a crazy story.
That is a crazy story. So how old were you when you had your first amateur fight?
11, 12. My first amateur fight.
Right around
then? Yeah, right around then.
So they jumped right in there?
Pretty much in there straight away. Wow. I lost all the weight and you want to have a fight. And again, funny story is I remember my coach saying, you want to have a fight? I said, okay, that'd be cool. So I went and told my dad when he picked me up in the car. He goes, the coach wants me to have a fight. He said, fight? He goes, we didn't come here to fight. We came here to lose weight and you know, get better for rugby. I said, well, I'm going to do it. He goes, all right, I'm going to support you then. So I remember that first fight was I fought this really tall kid. He was massive. And it was like I was doing a 100-meter freestyle swimming race. I was just throwing punches, haymakers. I bloodied him up. I beat him. I won the fight and I got hooked. You know, that real combat, you can't beat it.
Yeah, what was that like when you don't have a whole family that was into it. You're a young guy and you make this decision. Like, what did it feel like once you won that first fight? Were you like, this is it?
Straight away, I said, this is it. This is unbelievable. You know that feeling before a fight, especially in the amateurs, you're using the same gloves. you know, that we're using the tournament. So you're putting them on, you can see the blood and you can smell it and, you know, the sweat and everything, you know. You got everyone there ready to watch.
Wow.
It's pretty crazy, but, you know, my grandparents are old school too, so trying to tell them that, you know, I'm fighting, I'm boxing, they're like, no.
Why?
They can't even deal with me having an earring, let alone all the tattoos. And they're like, no boxing, no way. Go get a job, go work.
Oh, boy.
I said, no, I'm going to box, you know. And
are they still around?
All of them except my grandfather, yeah. And, right. And same with him, you know, God bless him now. He'd say, you know, he's old school.
Did he eventually realize, though?
Eventually he did. But even before this fight, when we spoke to him, you know, before he passed away, leading to this fight, with all the dramas that we had, he said, just accept it, whatever, just whatever they say, just take it, get the money, you know, for your family. Still that old school mentality, make money for the family. And that's what they did. They came overseas in the 60s from Greece, you know, didn't speak the language at all, you know, to give a better life for themselves. And all of a sudden they met their wives and their husbands, and, you know, all of a sudden they have a family, they raise a family, and, you know, they move on to, you know, me being here, you know, the next generation. It really is an amazing story.
It is an amazing story. So you got a 20-0 record right now, and you started your professional career in 2013. Is that what it was?
18 years of age.
That's crazy, right? I mean,
18, 19, something.
Not that long ago.
You know, to think about it, that you know, a year and a half, 2 years ago, when I fought at MSG, when I beat Mickey Bay, I only got paid like $20,000.
You know,
to think, and when I paid everybody else, it's and worked out my training expenses and had my kids there and my wife, you know, with me. Okay, I lived off the sponsorships, you know, the small amount of sponsorships.
That was your first real world-class opponent, right?
Yeah, it was. And, you know, when his name popped up, you know, and they said Mickey Bay, I was already number three in the world at that stage, but I wasn't tested yet properly on the American scene. I jumped at it straight away. I was so excited. Okay, this is what I came here to the US for. This is the kind of guy, a veteran, a guy that's been there, a guy that knows the ins and outs of boxing, the little tricks, you know, the smooth moves. You know, that's what I wanted. A lot of fighters will say, nah, too risky.
Yeah.
Let's suck up the another guy and let's get closer to the rankings. Hopefully we'll get a shot and we'll make some money and see how we go. But I've always been about taking the hardest road, the risk. You know, that's what I did in that fight as well.
You certainly did, and that's it's a wake-up call to people, too, when they hear about that purse. Because a lot of people, they think of boxing purses, they think of the purses that Tyson Fury gets, or that, you know, Floyd Mayweather gets, or Deontay Wilder. The reality is, guys coming up, even when you're headlining, even when you're the main event, it's not a lot of money.
No, it really isn't, you know. And if you go out there thinking that it's just about the money, you will fall over. You don't chase the money, it will eventually come. Again, with this fight, too, I was originally set with Triller to get $2.1 million. All of a sudden, the problems that happened and the issues, you know, it was a lot less now for Matchroom. But for me, it was never about the money. And people online and friends were saying, you're crazy, man. What are you doing? Because we kind of took a stance and said that, no, we want to fight. We're sick of these games. And, you know, the sanctioning body went out and said that, this is enough. No more date changes. You guys are done.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot of money to lose.
It is.
You know, but I knew my vision. I said, doesn't matter.
What was the difference in the payday?
It was from 2.1 to 1.3.
Wow.
So it's a fair bit of money. But
lost $1 million.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. But again, it's never about that.
But look what the glory did, and look where the position you're in now. I mean, now you're in a position to make a gigantic amount of money. If they can pull off that huge show in Australia, if you could talk somebody into going to Australia and you do a stadium, my goodness.
Unbelievable.
Woo!
It's going to be big. But again, it's never been about the money. For the money sets up my family, my kids. For me, it's that glory, the legacy, the battles. I love the battles.
Right.
And I love that real combat. You know, I get excited. I want to fight. I love to fight.
When you started out your career, did you have a boxer that you emulated or that you wanted to be like, or someone that, who you admired their career and wanted to resemble their style?
Roberto Duran. And I was so privileged to FaceTime with him a couple of days ago.
Oh, yeah?
Mauricio Suleiman from WBC president.
Oh, man. I met him in Madison Square Garden once. I was starstruck.
What a man. What a man. He, who's your favorite fighter? Okay, Duran, he's he's a guy idolized.
Duran in his prime, like the Ken Buchanan days. Yeah. People think his prime was as a welterweight. It was not. No, it was as a lightweight.
It's a lightweight. And, you know, that WBC belt, you know, to see him on there, and obviously I'm on there, and you got Floyd on there, the great lightweights.
Yeah.
You know, when Mauricio said, okay, I'm going to FaceTime him, I was like real nervous. I go, it's Duran, you know. So, you know, I spoke to him. He was so you know, so happy to chat, and you know, he congratulated me, which was amazing. You know,
that's fantastic.
He's unbelievable. And I had my Duran moment in that fight as well, because in round 12, when we both, you know, looked at each other, and he didn't want to accept it, Lopez. And I was waiting for some kind of acceptance, and he didn't want it. So I gave him that shove, that push, like. And then I'm going to celebrate. Like Duran did with Sugar Ray in the first fight.
Yeah, so, well, Duran, I think he called him a whore.
Yeah, that's Duran for you. Yeah. It's been crazy. It really has been. You know, I've had, obviously, Duran, I faced him with Canelo. You know, he showed his love and support, and, you know, what I did in that fight.
Oh, that's beautiful.
You know, I know Manny Pacquiao, I'll be FaceTime with him as well.
That's
I'm
fantastic.
Sitting here with you. It's been crazy.
Canelo's in a crazy position, man. He's going to move up to cruiserweight for his next fight.
Unbelievable.
Isn't that wild?
He just loves the...
the challenge?
Yeah, the challenges, yeah. I think that's what gets him up.
You know, it must. I mean, he's truly one of the all-time greats already. But the fact that he went up to light heavyweight, knocked out Kovalev, and now he wants to go all the way up to cruiserweight. 190 pounds.
Yeah, he's
going to
fight Makabu.
Yeah.
And that guy's no joke. I had a look at him.
He's a big fella.
Big, strong, knocked out a lot of guys. So this is a risk, but
it's a big risk.
He loves it. Without risk, you know, there's no reward.
Well, I think he really truly has his mind set on being the greatest Mexican champion of all time, and maybe even the greatest boxer of all time. And I think he can do it. I think he's in that running.
Oh, he
when
is,
you
yeah.
see, like, the Danny Jacobs fight, and you see his head movement, and you realize, like, how much he's taken from the one loss that he had to Floyd, where he – I mean, that was a fight where he realized, like, man, there's levels to this shit. And there's some guys you just can't hit. And how amazing was that transformation from him before that to afterwards, because now – his head movement and his defense is sensational.
Yeah. And he's not a big guy.
No.
He's small. Obviously.
How tall is he? He's probably 5'8"?
Yeah, 5'8".
And now he's going to go up to 190. What was cruiserweight, 95?
I think so, yeah.
That's wild, man, because you're talking about a guy who's probably 210 and cutting down to 95.
He did say that he was not going to come in, you know, heavy at all.
No, but his opponent will.
That's right.
Yeah. So
but he said he's going to try stay around that natural, you know, weight that he's at, because he doesn't want to put on any more, because it probably affect his speed and, you know, his movements.
Well, all he has to do is be over 175, right? I mean, that's cruiserweight is basically what. There's nothing between 75 and cruiser, right? So one of the few weight classes in boxing.
No, I don't think so. Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird. It's a weird jump, right? In boxing.
It is, and you know what? I'm trying to think how many divisions it is. I don't know if he's trying to get close to the great Manny Pacquiao. I don't think he can.
I don't think he can.
I don't think he can.
He'd have to go all the way up to heavyweight.
Heavy or super heavy, so.
All right, because correct me if I'm wrong, but boxing goes middleweight, 160, super 68, light heavyweight, 75, but then there's a giant jump to cruiserweight.
Cruiserweight, actually, they've just introduced another weight class, the Bridger weight.
Oh,
so there's another one.
Where's that?
So again,
between cruiser and heavy.
Yes, I think so.
Oh,
yeah.
But between light heavy and cruisers, 20 pounds. Mm. That's a big gap in boxing. The fact that he's going to make that leap, and the fact that he started off at 154, is crazy. And he fought Floyd at 52.
It's crazy.
Nuts. Nuts.
And it shows. It shows the kind of fighter he is. That the risk he's willing to take, and you got to applaud that.
Fantastic.
And even after a loss against Floyd, he's come back and he's beat all these guys. You know, incredible.
No, he's
truly a great athlete and a great fighter.
If he retired tomorrow, he's one of the all-time greats.
Yes, he's in the Hall of Fame. Yeah, one of the all-time greats.
Without a doubt. And if you know, you watch his knockout of Caleb Plant.
Yeah.
Like, see, that was one he had to earn.
Yeah, he did.
You know? Caleb, he had to earn that one.
I met Caleb two nights ago. He was at the hotel in L.A., and really nice guy, great guy. And, you know, he seemed disappointed because he goes, I was trying to do what you just done and win these belts. And I said, man, you gave so much heart and you gained so much respect. Because, you know, a lot of people weren't giving him that chance. And to do what he did, you know, he didn't win the fight, but, You know, you got that respect. You went, you know, so many rounds.
He looked amazing.
He looked very good. You boxed nice. Yeah. And he's only had 21 fights, right. 22 fights.
It was a learning experience for sure. A learning experience for sure. But you look at Canelo's power is wild. What he did to Saunders, that was wild. Yeah.
Fractured that eye.
Fractured his whole face.
You think from one shot.
One shot. Yeah. Did you ever look at the diagram of all the repair they had to do to his face? Have you ever seen that?
Yeah, I did see it. Yeah, it was brutal.
It's like crazy.
Broken everywhere.
Eye socket, all the orbital bone was shattered around the eye socket, the cheek, the jaw.
I think from just one punch, one devastating shot like that.
That motherfucker can punch.
And again, Billy Joe was boxing nice. Yes. He was close.
He looked very good.
But, you know, Canelo, I feel like even in the Caleb Plant fight, you know, he's just doing his thing. Mm-hmm. He's waiting for the moment. He's so composed.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of guys try to rush. A lot of guys, they forget about that composure.
Right.
You know, in the fight game, especially in boxing, you got 12 rounds. You know, you got a lot of time, 36 minutes in them ropes. A lot of time to you know, dissect your opponent and break them down. And that's what he does it so well.
He does it so well, and he has that patience and confidence of a multi-division world champion who's faced the best of the best, so that when he gets into those championship rounds, he gets into those later rounds, he knows that he's managed his energy so perfectly.
Yep.
The Kovalev fight's a good example of that, right? Because Kovalev looked pretty good early on in the fight.
He's boxing very nice.
But to see him knock out Kovalev and I think, this is just fucking... I know Kovalev is not the same Kovalev as fought Andre Ward the first time, but if you see...
That was a brutal shot. Landed clean, and Kovalev was all over the shop and...
Wild.
Put him down, and he's a big guy.
I know, and he cracked him with one left hook and had him fucked.
Unbelievable.
It's crazy.
Truly, you know, an all-time great and a guy that we're getting to witness and have the pleasure to witness right now.
Yeah.
So to be able to FaceTime with him and you know, just hear his advice, you know, about keeping that dedication, don't lose sight of what you're doing and, you know, continue, you know, reigning for a long time was amazing. And
that is amazing.
I'm sure Lopez didn't like seeing that when I did post it because I know he was only a few weeks ago up there with all his belts trying to take the limelight of Canelo at his fight.
Well, Lopez is a young guy. I mean, what is he, 24?
24, yeah.
Yeah, he's going to develop character from this. Not that he doesn't already have character, but he's going to develop more character from this. And I think this loss will make him a better fighter.
100%. And that's what I told him too. You know, when that fight was done and, you know, I knew I'd won the fight, I said, you'll bounce back, you know, respect, you know, but he's young. He's going to learn. Yeah. And, you know, I can't sit here and knock the guy. I bled with the guy. I sweated with the guy.
Yeah.
You know, we gave, you know, the world an unbelievable fight.
Well, it's the beautiful thing about what you did is that he is a great fighter.
Yeah.
And because he's a great fighter, it made your victory so amazing.
Yep.
If he wasn't a great fighter, it's not going to be that impressive.
No.
It was the fact that you were facing a guy who just beat Lomachenko, who is just a world-class fighter who many people thought was the scariest guy in that division, and you came out on top.
Look, straight after my world title eliminator in London when I beat Lee Selby, you know, and another former champion, a guy who's been around a long time, straight away I called him out. And like you said, this guy was posed as the scariest guy in the division, the guy that no one wanted to fight. Unbelievable power, unbelievable boxing, had it all. And he does have you know, great attributes. But I saw something. And again, I go back to that sixth sense. Back in 2019, he was at a fight in Pechanga in California. And I was there as well. I got flown out to be at a world championship fight. And we met. And the media got us to take a photo together. I knew inside me, I'm going to fight this guy somewhere. So when they tweeted the photo out, I retweeted and wrote, future mega fight.
Wow.
Yeah, and I knew it. I'm going to fight this guy. Even before that, when I first saw him on the scene, when he came out, he had the stylish, you know, fight gear and making a lot of noise. He was doing the Fortnite kind of, you know, celebrations. There's this feeling that I'm going to fight him. I know I'm going to fight him. You know, so... I have that, that feeling. I get that sense. You know,
do you think he's going to want a rematch?
I asked him straight after the fight. I said, come to an Australia, 80,000. And he didn't want nothing to do with it. And I'm hearing they want nothing to do with it. So
Why is that?
Took a lot of shots in that fight.
You think that's what it is?
He felt it firsthand. So
yeah?
I think they're going to move up now. I think he needs a long rest. I think he needs some time.
No, the thing about it is, I know he's big. I know he's big for 140 or 135, and that, you know, 140 is probably better for him. But he's not the most shredded guy. Like when you look at him, he's got a lot of power, and and you got to wonder how much of that is because he put a lot of weight on after the weigh-ins. But you know, he has made 135 successfully in the past. I don't know what his diet and regimen and training routine is like, but it seems like if you want to chase the big money, I mean, it was such a close fight. If you wanted to chase the big money, I would imagine that they would take a break, take a breath, regroup, and look at all the options on the table. Yeah. The rematch is where the money's at. That's where the money's at.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's where the legacy's at, too.
And I'm open. I'm open to everything. For me, I'm a fighter.
Of course.
I'd love to have another battle with him. So really, it's up to him now as well, because I heard some stuff that, you know, he doesn't even want to box anymore at one point. So for me, he'll be hearing
at 24?
He'll be hearing this, you know. You're a talented kid. You know, you got the world at your feet. One loss doesn't define you. You come back, we do it again, you move up. You know, you fight someone else at 135, you bounce back up. Whatever you do, you know, you don't throw the towel in. You know, it's too young, but he'll be back.
Did you really, you heard that from a credible source?
Yeah, I did hear it, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I did hear it.
Interesting. Man, this is such a great time for boxing.
It is, especially at 135, too.
Really, in all the weight classes. I mean, look at Terrence Crawford.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that Sean Porter fight. Holy shit.
Unbelievable.
Phenomenal.
Yeah. Both guys, even Sean.
Sean. He looked incredible.
He brought it. He looked great. He boxed well. He had a great game plan, and Crawford just adapts.
Yeah.
You talk about adapting in a fight.
Oh, my God. He's the best.
That guy's, you know, that's adapting right there.
Well, he is the best stance switcher since Marvin Hagler.
Yeah.
I mean, he really is.
Yeah, he'll hit you from whatever side. He can knock you out with either hand.
God.
And
it's such an advantage, too.
A great fighter.
To have that advantage to be able to fight southpaw or orthodox with equal fluidity, because he's so smooth and he finds openings. And when he switches up on guys, you can see them make, they have to calculate and now put it into the, like, okay, southpaw, okay, orthodox.
Well, he's never given the opponent a chance to read him.
Right.
And once you can read a fighter, see, Lopez, I read him many, many, you know, months before. You know, I knew straight away, okay, I see what he does, I see the mistakes. You know, I could read it. Now, Crawford, he's a guy that he'll hit you from here, then he switches, then he's in, he's out.
Yeah.
You can't read a guy like that. It's very hard to read.
Right.
You know, and obviously, you know, me saying that I can't read him, you know, he's big, so it means I'm not going to fight him because he's too big for me anyway.
Yeah.
But he's a good fighter, man. Really,
he's
good
tremendous.
Fight. You know, for me, I'm even going to the fights on the weekend, the Haney JoJo Diaz fight, going to the Gervonta Davis fight with Isaac Cruz. As a fight fan, not only as a guy that I was scouting to see, okay, who might be the next guy, just as a fight fan, seeing the fights, being there, you know, I live for that. I love it.
That's beautiful. I was very impressed with Cruz as well.
He fought well.
He fought really well.
He's tiny and he just comes and...
But that shell that he fights under, hard to pick it apart.
Especially
and then,
when you got him coming forward like that and he's throwing dangerous shots.
Yep.
You know, he excited me. He didn't get the win, but... You know,
well, both him and but there was so many good fights.
Yeah,
there was. I mean, God, this is like, it's such an incredible time for boxing.
Yeah,
but in basically every division,
great fights. Yeah,
from
great
the top down, from heavyweight down.
It's a good time. Boxing is in a really good state.
Yeah,
really good position, and we are starting to see it more and more. You know, the best are fighting the best. You know, I think everyone is trying to become the undisputed champions in their divisions, and you know, what better way? Because then it solidifies. There's the one champion.
Yes.
There won't be all these different champions all over the shop. You know, it gives more credibility to boxing as well.
No, I think so for sure. And I think that, you know, that old expression, as the heavyweights go, so does boxing.
Yep.
Like, and that's this is a perfect example, because right now the heavyweight division's on fire.
Yep.
Because there's so much exciting activity in the heavyweight division. You know, I mean, they're going to do that Usyk versus Joshua rematch, which was, what a fight that was, huh?
You know, and I said it, Usyk is an unbelievable boxer.
Oh my God, he's so good.
I got the opportunity to fight on his the co-main when I won my world title eliminator. It just, he's not a big guy.
No.
He's not massive, but the way he boxes, the footwork that he has, you know, that southpaw position is unbelievable. You know, and look, I love Joshua too. Great fighter. You know, he's going to have to really come with something special. You know, to win this rematch, and again,
when
all odds against him.
What's the schedule for?
I think they're saying March.
March.
I think I'm hearing March, yeah.
Do you think when a guy gets so thoroughly outboxed like that and almost put away in the 12th, do you think that's quick to come back from a fight like that?
It is, but again, it shows that the testament that Joshua has.
Yes.
You know, to say, you know what, like the Ruiz fight.
Yeah,
straight back in there, straight back on the horse.
Yeah, but Ruiz didn't get back on the horse. Yeah, that's the
problem, yeah.
Ruiz got in the kitchen.
He enjoyed it too much. He's looking good now, but...
Yeah, he looks great now. Yeah. But then again, right, that's a wake-up call, right? And those wake-up calls for a guy like him are so important. And now, see if you can find a recent picture of Andy Ruiz, because he looks fucking incredible.
Well, he's with the Canelo team now.
Yes.
Eddie Reynoso.
I love that.
Got him going the way he's meant to be.
But I'll tell you what, he got in trouble with Chris Areola, because he did the same thing with Areola that Lopez tried to do with you.
Yep.
He tried to just come at him, guns blazing.
And Areola, you know, he's a hard-nosed veteran, a guy that's been there. And he'll take shots and he'll give them back.
Areola's a warrior. Yeah,
good fighter, man.
Great fighter. And such a... I mean, you want to talk about a great Mexican standoff between those two guys? My God, that was classic Mexican boxing match.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and that's what, you know, like, if there is one nationality that's like synonymous with blood and guts, amazing fights, it's Mexicans. It's
They love it. They love it.
Oh, my God.
You should have seen, like, in L.A., you know, they were going crazy in Vegas. You know, they kept coming up. They loved the blood and the guts and, you know, the back and forth exchanges and the knockdowns. They love it and they idolize it, you know.
Yeah,
and,
they do.
You know, I wish more, you know, nationalities were like that, you know, in the fight game. But that's one country that they really love their fight game and, you know, they got some tremendous, you know, champions.
Oh, so many champions. I mean, like, arguably one of the greatest of all time, Julio Cesar Chavez. Yeah, yeah. And then I think now with Canelo moving into the position as, first of all, he's like the number one pay-per-view draw right now, or right up there with Tyson Fury. And arguably not just the best that's active right now, pound for pound, but like one of the best of all time.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he truly is.
It's, here we go. Look how good he looks.
Wow.
Look at him on the right. Look at him.
Yeah, that was the I believe that was the Joshua rematch.
Was that the rematch?
I think.
Yeah, he got a little heavy. He looks good. He looks very good. But, you know, like the amount of work that it takes to get down to that, if he had done that for that Joshua rematch and came in looking like that, who the fuck knows what would have happened?
And psychologically, too, if he came in looking like that.
Oh, my God.
Joshua would be like, okay, this guy's serious.
Right.
When you see him coming in like the way he did.
Yeah.
Joshua already knows, all right, this guy's not taking this serious. He's enjoyed it too much.
Well, there's some guys who kind of like being fat and knocking out muscular guys.
Yeah.
Well, you know?
Perfect example.
Butterbean.
Butterbean back in the day. You still see his stuff pop up everywhere.
Yeah. Oh, fat people loved it when Butterbean won. Like, yes, one for us.
Yeah, one for us.
I mean, look, Tyson Fury's not the leanest guy in the world either.
But the conditioning he has, his conditioning is elite. You know, to be knocked down against Deontay, come up in that third fight.
Yeah.
You know, it was a great fight.
Not only to be knocked down, but to be knocked down the way he was knocked down.
Yep.
Where he got hit in the head and you see the ripples go down his whole body. Because it was such a tremendous shot. Has there ever been a guy who punches harder than Deontay Wilder?
I don't think so. Yeah.
It's wild, right?
I think the power he possesses, that one punch power, you know, and he came out boxing nice too. He was popping the jab. He looked good. It's okay. But straight away, I go, how quick is he going to go back to what he knows best when he does get tagged?
Right.
That's what he did. But devastating power. And you know what? They both gave a tremendous fight. You know, I was on the edge of my seat.
He almost had him, which is crazy.
You know, when he put Fury down, I thought, and Fury kind of looked to his corner and like kind of said, no, I'm in trouble here.
Yeah.
Then he just rose. You know, in that first fight, the way he rose, like, it was like the Undertaker from the WWE. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, and then, you know, the second fight, he got dropped twice.
Yeah.
And still managed to pull it out and then stop Deontay. And the KO, when he did stop him, like, holy shit. Yeah,
brutal.
Brutal. They're talking about matching him up with Ruiz. Deontay and Ruiz.
That'd be a good fight.
That's a great fight.
I think, go either way. But I think Deontay's just got that pop. I just don't know how much has been taken out of him. You know, when you go through them wars and them battles, especially coming from them losses too now, you lose yourself a lot. You know, they say inside them ropes, you know, a fighter loses a bit of himself every time he goes in there.
Yeah.
Especially when you're in the hard fights. So it just depends how much is left in the tank for him.
Yeah, and you think about the majority of his career, it's just him knocking everybody out.
Yep.
And so psychologically, there's a hurdle to cross too.
That's
because
right.
Now it's two down. and one fight in between, right, where he knocked out Luis
Ortiz. Yeah, Ortiz. So it went from the first fight, which was a draw, knocked out Ortiz, and they went literally back to back.
Yeah. So, but these two losses back to back like that are hard to dig, and they were also both stoppages.
Yeah.
Which is hard to deal with.
Hard to come back, boy. But.
And then, like, the first one, the first stoppage loss, it was all those crazy excuses, too. Like, he thought egg weights and the gloves were all wrong and his weight suit was too heavy and somebody poisoned him. It's like,
it reminds me of Tim Lopez.
Not quite as bad.
Not as bad.
No.
He really went with everything that he could find.
Everything. Poison.
The poison from his trainer.
Yeah, which
who's
is
the guy that's been with him, for his whole life. The suit that he came out with.
Yeah.
I just don't understand why people just, you take it like a man. It is what it is. Even if you do have something wrong with you or an injury, you make yourself look worse.
I think a fighter is as great as he is, it's hard to have someone around him that can tell him something and have him listen. And someone who's really got his interest for it. Hey, man, don't say shit.
You have a lot of yes men around.
A lot of them.
And that's the most important thing for me right now is to continue keeping my strong core of people, my good people around me. I got my kids. I'm a family man, away from everything. That's the most important thing in my life. So, you don't want to get distracted in the bright lights. You don't want to be out there doing stupid things. So I think by having my kids there, that keeps me in a position where, you keep your feet on the ground. You keep looking for more greatness. Like Canelo, he has so much success, so much money, so many championship belts.
Still
does his thing. Yeah. Pacquiao as well.
Yeah.
Floyd as well.
Floyd when he was at his top.
Floyd,
yeah.
Top of his game.
Yep.
So much
Rich
money coming in.
Didn't care.
Still grinds like he's got nothing. And that's the most important thing.
That really is the most important thing. And now, how do you, there is a time when a fighter becomes very famous where the hanger-ons and the people that are parasites would try to come and hang out with you. How do you avoid that shit?
I've got a good people around me. My father, he's a solid guy, so, he can see him coming straight away if I don't see him. But I'm very sharp as well. I can see someone that's trying to take advantage, for their gain.
Yeah.
So, if these guys haven't been there from the start, through the trenches, the hard work that we've had to go through, because I've really had to earn every spot, and every position I'm in right now, they're not there for the right reason. So if I don't see him firsthand, my father will.
Well, that's beautiful that you have that. That helps tremendously. Now, do you get approached by a lot of sponsors and a lot of companies that want you to represent them? And if you do, how do you manage your time when it comes to that stuff?
Look, there's a lot more now coming.
Yeah.
But, my manager, Peter Kahn, he's very sharp with that as well. And, we make sure that it makes the most sense. You don't want to fill yourself. The last thing you want to see is an athlete fill themselves with, all these sponsorships and endorsements, and it just looks tacky.
Mm-hmm.
You pick the right brands, ones that, suit me as well, what I believe in, the athlete that I am. But, they deal with that. Obviously, I'm involved in it as well, and, make sure it's right. The deals are right. You don't get sucked into anything stupid, and, you go from there.
Well, that's a healthy approach. And.
Yeah.
It's beautiful to see a young guy like yourself with so much success but has his brain totally straightened and tied down correctly, and your mind is right. And
it's very important because this fight game, especially boxing, is filled with sharks.
Yeah.
Chameleons change their skin real quick.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Even with the next fight being in Australia, a few interviewers have asked, they go, is it who pays the most money? No, not necessarily. It's not about money. It's about, what does my promotional company, Ferocious Promotions, what are they going to be involved in? Do I get opportunities to have guys that are with me, guys that are signed with me on the cards? So that there, because I didn't have that. I had to go through the hard road, the local circuit, literally selling my tickets, selling the tables, getting your $5 here, your $10 here, for each table you sold or your ticket you sold to make it. So if I can be able to change a talented kid that I've seen and that I have with me and put him on a card and give him the opportunities, that's worth more than money. So for me, like I said, it's about being smart, having the right approach, and changing the people around me, the good people around me, changing their lives as well.
So is that part of your goal, to try to elevate the boxing scene in your area as well?
Definitely. That's why we have Ferocious Promotions, my company. We want to keep getting the good guys, the young amateurs, the promising professionals, and give them the right blueprint. You know, a lot of, like I said, a lot of people in this game, they want to try suck the fighter, suck them dry, and take everything from them. And you know, you see it all the time, time after time, where fighters finish the sport and they're left with nothing.
Yeah,
got nothing. You know, so we put our lives on the line. We go through hell and back. You want to be able to leave this sport and be able to, you know, give a good roadmap for these young guys coming through.
Do you have a plan for when you exit the sport? Do you think you'll stay in boxing as a trainer or as a manager or anything like that?
Definitely, I'll be involved in boxing.
Yeah,
you know, maybe the commentary. You know, I had my debut commentary on the weekend.
Yeah, in Vegas. You did great.
The Zone. I got a lot of good feedback.
Beautiful.
I think the world said that we need that. We need real fighters actually doing the commentary. So that was great.
I think that's true too. I think that helps a lot. It helps with the UFC for sure.
It was fun. It was exciting for me to be there.
Well, there's insight that a guy like you can provide. Yeah. That, you know, a guy who's a world champion that you're just not going to get from anybody else.
Well, me and Sean Porter were just feeding off each other and back and forth with things that we see and the aspect that we see in the fight game. So definitely the commentary is something I love to be involved in. You know, the promotional side of things, the managing side of things. And I love to be in the gym too. So I think the training side of things as well.
Is Sean really going to retire?
You know, you can never say yes or no with any fighter when they say they're retired. He's been through a lot too in the fights. He's had a lot of good wins.
Yeah,
you know, some tough victory, tough losses as well. So, you know, maybe it is time. It really depends how he feels. Yeah. I'd love to see him come back. I think it was a bit premature as well
such a good fight until he got caught.
Yeah, I thought that you know, you're doing so well against Crawford, who's top pound for pound. You know, why throw it in now? You still got more to give, but that's their decision.
Were you surprised the way his dad reacted to the fight?
I was too.
I can't believe you said that.
Yeah, it just kind of put him on the spot, and like Sean was, just didn't know what was going on. Like,
well, he handled it well. Yeah. He just handled it well. You know, but that's his dad.
That's why we think now.
For people that don't know what he said, his dad said he didn't prepare correctly.
Yeah, and then when you think about him retiring straight away, you start to think, was that possibly a reason? Was he upset?
Or
you don't
maybe
know.
He really didn't prepare correctly. Yep. And maybe his dad's truth, right. Yeah. And maybe he's realizing that this is the truth. Yep. I mean, nobody knows you better than your father.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, listen, man, you are a part of one of the most exciting eras of boxing. I'm enjoying this as a fan, and I appreciate what you did in that fight. It was truly sensational, and I hope you enjoy every minute of this. You earned it. You are right now one of the top guys in boxing, and it's beautiful to watch, man.
I really appreciate it. You know, we're just going to keep getting better and better, never lose sight of the goal and keep our feet on the ground, you know, and keep, you know, winning. The most important thing is winning, not only in the ring, but winning in life and keeping the right people around me.
You know? Well, George, you're a fucking true champion, and I hope we get to do this again, and good luck to you, sir.
This was an absolute
pleasure. My pleasure.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, everybody. Bye.